9 on AM 1500 KSTP.
Bell in the Kingdom of Nye on the Wild Card Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning. In a moment comes Jim Mars, who used to be a reporter with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And we were discussing the retraction of the Dallas Morning News. The Dallas Morning News, of course, reporting that there was coming forward a Secret Service member who had seen Bill Clinton with Monica Lewinsky in a compromising position. That story is being retracted. Repeat, that story is being retracted by the Dallas Morning News. Jim Mars, my guest coming up, not unhappy to see that. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram, one of the chief competitors down there Texas way. This year, give a gift that will truly last as long as your love. Well, all right, I have a large dish of Pro in front of me that I'm eating with reference to the result of the Super Bowl game, and I will say it again. Congratulations, Denver. You earned it. John Elway, you earned it. Green Bay, you fell down and choked upon the job. And I just, it was like seeing the unstoppable, the unimaginable occurring. But it did, and I have nothing to say except that I was dead wrong. Jim Mars, a native of Fort Worth, Texas. Mr. Mars earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in journalism from the University of North Texas in 1966, attended graduate school at Texas Tech in Lubbock for 2 years further, has worked for several Texas newspapers, including the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, where beginning in 1968 he served as police reporter. Mr. Mars then became a general assignment reporter, covering stories locally and in Europe and the Middle East. After a leave of absence with a 4th Army Intelligence Unit during the Vietnam War, he became military and aerospace writer for the newspaper and an investigative reporter since 1980. Mr. Mars has been a freelance writer and public relations consultant. He's also produced a rural weekly newspaper along with a monthly a tourism tabloid and several videos. Since 1976, Mr. Mars has taught a course on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy at the University of Texas in Arlington in 1989. His book, Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, was published to critical acclaim. And within 3 years, he had gone into an 8th printing in both hardbound and softbound editions. Crossfire reached the New York Times paperback nonfiction bestseller list in mid-February of 92 and remained there for more than 6 weeks. His book became a basis for the acclaimed Oliver Stone film, JFK. Mr. Mars served as a chief consultant for both the film screenplay and production. In May of 77, Mars' in-depth investigation of UFOs, The Alien Agenda, was published by HarperCollins. In less than 2 months, Alien Agenda had garnered many positive reviews, itself going into an 8th printing. In 98, Mr. Mars will be featured speaker at a number of national conferences, including the 7th Annual International UFO Congress and the 6th Annual Gulf Breeze UFO Conference. An award-winning journalist, Mr. Mars is listed in both Who's Who in the World and Who's Who in America. Mr. Mars has won photography awards, including the Aviation Aerospace Writers Association National Writing Award and in as Newsmaker of the Year Award from the Fort Worth chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. In 1993, Mr. Mars received Freedom Magazine's Human Rights Leadership Award. Jim Mars is a busy guy. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art. Lots of things to talk about tonight.
There certainly are, beginning with the whole business surrounding the president. I guess that's where we ought to start off. The Dallas Morning News denying a story that, actually retracting a story, that a Secret Service agent had caught the president with his pants down.
Well, and that sounds pretty bogus to me to begin with, because the Secret Service is there to protect the president, both physically and also his reputation.
And so they'd be very unlikely to ever do anything like this.
Unless it was part of some hidden plan.
Well, here we go. Is there more to all of this than is apparent on the surface, Jim? Give us your reading.
Well, I'll just quote President Franklin Roosevelt, who's quoted as saying, when it comes to politics, nothing just happens. There's always some plan. Somebody's got an objective behind anything that goes on. And when these things start coming out, I mean, the idea of President Clinton having an affair, you know, I don't know. Just right off the top of my head, I want to say, so what? Ike Eisenhower had an affair. Yep. You know, Winston Churchill had an affair. So what? The question is, can he do the job, you know, and what is going on? Now, of course, this one has an added problem, because now they've really got a legal hook. If they can prove that he suborned testimony, then, you know, they've got something that they can really come at him with.
Yeah, but all indications are they don't have that. Now, what I'm getting from most legitimate news agencies this morning is that Monica Lewinsky is making a deal to testify for Ken Starr, but only to the degree that she did, in fact, have an affair with him.
So the whole thing about immunity from testimony, from prosecution, would hinge on she's not going to talk about whether or not she lied about
the situation. Oh, that's right. Or that she was not encouraged to lie.
Right.
By Vernon Jordan or the...
Which basically takes the entire serious legal aspect of the whole thing away. Now we're just into innuendo and personal and morals.
That's right. And according to all the surveys...
Well, what else is new? We got Jennifer Flower, we got Paula Jones. I mean, what else is new?
Not much. Not much. And
I think the timing. You have to look at the timing. It's just like last summer in July, just as thousands of people were gathering from all over the world in Roswell, New Mexico, many of them asking very serious questions about what happened here. You got the Pentagon that holds a news conference and says changes their story on Roswell for the fourth time and says, oh, it was crash dummies they threw out over the desert. You know, even Sam Donaldson had a hard time with that. I remember he looked the spokesman in the eye and said, you really expect us to believe that?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So you have to look at the timing. Here we're on the eve of the State of the Union address. If you'll recall, you were part of it. The night that you had the big open government show.
Yes.
And you had Dr. Edgar Mitchell on.
And we were supposed
on.
We were supposed to have you on.
Richard Hoagland on.
Right.
Had all, you know, a lot of heavyweights, and no matter what their differences might be, the commonality was that it's time for the government to treating us, the taxpayers, the people who work half a year to send them money so that they can lord it over us, it's time for them to quit treating us like a bunch of backward children. And they've got to come clean with what's going on. And, of course, if you also recall, there were plans to publish a full-page ad in the Washington Post, an open letter to President Clinton saying, it is now time to level with us and tell us what is really going on here, since we now know, on the basis of the Webb Hubble book and on what Dr. Stephen Greer has said, that there has been serious consideration and serious meetings held up to and inside the White House concerning the UFO situation.
Have those plans now been put on hold?
Absolutely. It's been shelved for the time being because nobody, you know, he's got his problems. Nobody wants to look like they're going to kick the guy while he's down. It put a stop to this growing momentum to demand openness in government. And this is something I think that we can all get behind. It doesn't matter what your listeners think about UFOs personally. They can be big believers or non-believers or skeptics in between, but I think we can all agree that that the time has long since passed when we in this country, who like to think of ourselves as free and democratic people, can be manipulated by hidden masters. Because when the President of the United States and the head of the Central Intelligence Agency and ranking military people and ranking congressmen cannot get to truthful information, we've got a real crisis, and it's far deeper and far more serious than somebody having an affair.
Well, I sure agree with that. But this is going to bring everything for a time to a screeching halt. So timing, you say, is everything.
That's right.
And I guess, how do you look at this down line in terms of the president's being able to address anything at all like this, or anything beyond this immediate problem that he's got?
Well, I try to sit back. See, my problem, Art, is that I go all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. I sat there the whole weekend, watched everything, you know, and thought I had a good handle on it. And then when Ruby steps forward and kills Oswald in the basement of the police station, I go, wait a minute. And then I patiently waited for a time and then actually read the Warren Report, which is something that very few people, even at that time, actually ever read it. They
That's
just read the newspapers and what the media said about it. And I read the report, and the report just didn't even make any sense to me. There was just too many holes and inconsistencies in it, and it was not very clear about what they were trying to say. And then just a month or two after the Warren Report came out, which was in late September of 64, I interviewed General Edwin Walker in Dallas, and he told me what I have since found out from many, many other people in Dallas. He said, listen, he called Jack Ruby Rubenstein, and because Jack Ruby was Jewish, and he said Rubenstein and Oswald knew each other. They were connected here in Dallas. Everybody knows that. He said that report's phony, and they're going to start over just on that fact alone. And since then, I found out there's many, many other people in Dallas who also saw them together and knew that there was a connection between Ruby and Oswald. So starting from that point, I take everything with the largest grain of salt possible. And as you can see from your own experience, we had the big oil crisis, you know, the gasoline shortage, red flags in the gas station. Oh, my God, we don't have any more petroleum.
That's right.
Well, that's bogus. That turned out to be a hoax.
Yes. As a matter of fact, prices have been precipitously falling. For light sweet crude, down, down, down.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we're looking at a crisis with Iraq. What do you see occurring there?
Well, that's a good question. First, you have to go back and realize that Saddam Hussein undoubtedly is a two-bit, ten-horned dictator. But for so many years, he was our two-bit, ten-horned dictator. And we supplied him with all the materials and war materials and ammunition and all the equipment he needed to fight that 8-year war with Iran, who
yes,
was then our big boogaboo. Everybody
right.
Remember the Ayatollah? You know, do you? Let's not forget that.
Sure.
And you just have to, everything seems like it's a deal, because then when his whole country was on its knees there financially because of that 8-year war with Iran, so he started figuring out how he could make some money. So he went to OPEC and he tried to get them to up the oil prices, or at least for Iraq, and they wouldn't go for it. They said, the deals are all cut, you're not going to upset the apple cart. So then he says, well, maybe I'll just go in. So then he calls the international bankers that had made all the loans to him, and he says, look, I can't pay. And it's that when he defaulted on those banknotes, that's when he became the new Hitler, because they can't allow him to get away with that, because then Mexico, Argentina, even the United States might say, well, gee, we can't pay either. And there goes the international banking system. They can't have that. So now he's got to be punished. So then, in the meantime, he's trying to figure out what he's going to do. So he says, well, I'll just go take back Kuwait, which was pretty much illegally carved out of Iraq by the British Army by force in 1963. And he said, I'll just get those oil reserves and I'll have more oil. And so he comes to April Glaspie, U.S. ambassador, and says, what are y'all going to do if I invade Kuwait? And he's told almost verbatim, well, that's an Arab problem. We don't have any real position on that.
That's correct.
Well, what does that sound like? Sounds like do what you want to do. So he invades Kuwait, and bango, off we go, man, into this huge war. And I will say this, the United States military behaved brilliantly. They took on the third largest military power in the world and whipped them inside a month. And yet, just as they were closing in, just as the pinchers were about to slam shut, and just about the time that that whole thing was going to get resolved over there and we'd be able to sort it out and clear it all up, it stopped.
Talk to me about...
And Saddam Hussein is still there. Now, what's that all about? I'll tell you what it's about. He picked up the telephone, told his bankers he'd start paying his interest, and they stopped the war. So what I'm telling you, Art, is something that you already well know. It's all a deal.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. We did a show on open government, but a lot of people, you may recall the attorney we had on that open show, think that we have a secret government and that trying to address all of this directly to our government, our representatives, is a hopeless case.
Well, I had a big discussion with Peter Gersten right after that, okay?
Yes.
And I got to tell you that I tend to agree with him. But here's where Peter and I got into it, and I hope I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I think he and I both agreed that because I agree with him. I think it's really far along, and I hear it every day, Art, and I know you do too. The guy on the street says, "But Art, what can I do about it? I'm just one person."
That's right.
You know? And there is that feeling, and they propagate that feeling. But here's the thing: we cannot allow ourselves to be broken into these two sections, to be divided into let's let the government take care of it or don't trust the government, don't tell the government anything. We've got to be right in the middle. We've got to push for our constitutional rights. We've got to see that our elected representatives do represent us and do the things that they should be doing. But at the same time, we need to take the bit in our mouth and we need to plow ahead. And people who are privately investigating a wide range of issues, they need to keep investigating. Alternative media needs to keep spreading. Talk shows like the Art Bell Show, Dreamland, needs to keep going, and we need to start improving our own condition. In fact, I'm echoing probably what your book, The Quickening, said. It's time that we do take charge and start changing our attitudes and start changing our thinking. And by the way, I don't know if you have aware of this or not, but I thought I'd share that just a week or so ago, Dr. Tom Van Flandem, doctorate in astronomy, Yale University,
yes.
In 91. He was chief of the Celestial Mechanics Branch at U.S. Naval Observatory. And he announced to the 191st National Meeting of the American Astronomical Society, which is not exactly a bunch of kooks and weirdos, that he had done a 3-year study of the face on Mars.
Yeah, oh yes.
And you've got that, and that it was not an optical illusion or a natural feature.
That's right.
I would like to echo his admonition to these astronomers. He said, "I suggest, in view of these test results, we prepare ourselves for a cultural shock certainly unrivaled in recent times." And we all need to start preparing ourselves for some shocks, because we need to start changing the way that we do business.
Well, of course, Richard Hoagland has been on that for years. I know that you've talked with Richard recently. Is he aware of the Van Flandren statement?
Oh, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. But what I was intrigued by was his little comment about how that he's basically saying, you guys better get ready to start shifting your paradigm.
Brookings Institute stuff, huh?
Right. By the way, here's another. I hope this isn't off on too much of a tangent, but I know you had David Oates on.
I did.
He was talking about the reverse speech, and I know one of the callers just a little while ago said she would like to know what the reverse speech analysis would be on Clinton's deal.
On the pronouncement of innocence.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you something. Here's a thought for you, okay? I know y'all went on and on about when Clinton was previous speech, and the reverse speech analysis showed that what he was really saying was, to hell with the earth, the desert will answer.
That's right.
Remember that?
Oh, very vividly.
And nobody could seem to figure out, what the heck does that mean?
Right.
Well, let me give you one little interpretation that has been suggested that's really intriguing to me, and it goes along with what we were speaking about. One of the things that they have used, they meaning the people who are in control of the UFO issue, have used very successfully over the years to keep leadership quiet about this, is the threat that if the people learn about the UFO situation, if it's openly discussed, it could lead to an open invasion, okay, and perhaps even the destruction of the Earth. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Indeed.
The first line, when he says to hell with the earth, it has been interpreted to be saying that, well, to hell with this destruction of the earth. Okay?
Story's got a break. All right, hold on, Jim. We'll be right back to you. Jim Mars is my guest. This is Coast to Coast AM.
fax for Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. Send it to him at area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Here again I am. Jim Mars is my guest. He'll be right back. We're discussing, well, what's going on with the president. We're discussing the secret government. And we're discussing, we're about to be discussing, UFOs, secrecy, and agendas. Once again, here is Jim Mars. Jim, I've got a fax here asking, Art, please ask Jim Mars to clarify what his remote viewer friend David Morehouse saw concerning ETs. I talked to David Morehouse, and he referred to Jim Mars as a knowledgeable person on remote viewing. What exactly did David Morehouse see in his visions?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, I'm going to tell you that it was my investigation and study of remote viewing that led to me writing the book on Alien Agenda, Alien Agenda.
I have not heard you say that before.
Well, and here's why. Prior to that, I've been keeping up with the UFO situation, studying it, reading everything that came along since the 50s, almost. But like most everybody else, I was having trouble putting it all together, and I was having trouble, thanks to the maddening lack of physical evidence, I wasn't certain enough to write something for a wide audience and say this is it. And then, yet that's what everybody wanted to know. What is it? What's going on? It was the remote viewing that pushed me over the edge. It was the remote viewing that showed me that it is real. And this is why the government has tried to downplay and poo-poo the whole remote viewing thing. Art and your audience, listen to this. Every single military-trained remote viewer had direct knowledge of the UFOs and the ETs. Every one of them. Even Dave Morehouse, who doesn't put a lot of stock in it. Dave's attitude is, so what? Yeah, they're all out there, but so what? We got problems enough here on this earth. And I think you could make a good argument for that.
Mm-hmm.
Others are very fascinated with the whole thing. But the point is, they all saw it. They all know it's real. And that's why the government had to clamp down on the distribution of information about remote viewing, because they didn't want everybody to know that these trained military intelligence officers who had been taught this technique by the United States Army, and it was being used by the Army and the CIA and the DIA, and that they were all seeing these ships flying around.
Do you have any idea whether there is still an ongoing program?
I couldn't prove this in a court of law, but I have no doubt in my mind that there are ongoing programs, and not just one, but several. I think the Navy has a remote viewing program going on, and I think the Army does. I think the DIA is continuing it, and probably others.
Most of the remote viewers that I've interviewed, Jim, deny it and think the program ended, too much political embarrassment, that kind of thing.
Well, just look at the facts, Art. They started this program in the mid-70s. It continued to be funded through four separate administrations, okay, to the tune of some $30 million, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but keep in mind you're only talking about a couple of dozen people.
Sure.
And so they continued this for over a quarter of a century through four administrations. Somebody obviously thought they were getting some valuable information. Or
right.
It would have been stopped long before.
All right. You said that's where a lot of Alien Agenda came from. And I think I've asked you this before. What Alien Agenda, Jim, what is the agenda? What did Morehouse and the rest of them determine?
Okay.
These fast walkers or whatever. Yeah, we are.
Let me touch briefly just on what I did with Alien Agenda. This is an overview. I did the same thing I did with the Kennedy assassination. That was a huge, complex issue full of all kinds of secondary issues, and what I did was pull it into one great big thing, say, here it all is, without making any judgments as to this, that, and the other thing, sifted it out to see what comes out. And I did the same thing with the UFO thing. We go all the way back to the ancient astronauts. We take a look at the moon. We all think we know about the moon. We don't know squat about the moon. We've been there six times, and instead of answering all our questions, there's more questions now about the moon than there was when we started. Then we go into the saucers of the Third Reich. There's a whole story. Then we go to the recovery of craft and the allegations of such, the underground bases, the contactees, the abductees, cattle mutilations, crop circles, and then finally into the remote viewing.
Let me stop you very quickly. There was a program about a week ago on an abduction of an entire family from, was it Clear Lake? I think it was Clear Lake or something like that. Have you heard about that?
I don't think so. I may not have.
Okay. It was put on by the UPN network, and it was about an abduction of an entire family, and it was run as a real program, in other words, with real 8mm footage. And UPN at the end actually ran credits like Alien 1, Alien 2, played by so-and-so, and they ran it as a is this real kind of deal. So you didn't hear about that?
No, I'm not familiar with that issue.
All right, there's been a lot of disinformation out there.
But as far as the abduction phenomena goes, you of all people realize that this is massive. There are many support groups out there for abductees. There are many clinical psychiatrists and psychologists that are dealing with people. You got Dr. John Mack up at Harvard.
Yep.
And I think that's interesting too, because right after Mack came out with his book, which basically says aliens are real and they are taking these people and we need to understand this and start dealing with this, they set up a committee up there. And boy, early on it was like they were going to rake him over the coals, put him on the rack, and then hoist him up on the yardarm or something. And yet nothing happened. They reviewed his material. They looked at everything that had been done, and they just kind of packed up and went on off because he was on solid investigative grounds, just as I am.
Why are they taking people?
That's a good question. The thing is, though, I don't think that it's anything to get overly fearful about, because there is absolutely no hard documentation to show that people are being swiped and not brought back. There's a lot of claims to that, but all the abductees, they come back, okay? They may have a little pinprick here, a little mark there, but they all come back. Now, and let me add this. In researching my book, Alien Agenda, I was stupefied to find, and I'm still running into them, more and more people who, once they know that you're taking this subject seriously and are not making any judgments towards anybody, they start telling you, well, look. And I'm running into more and more people who say, look, I have had a similar type of experience, but I did not feel like that it was fearful or a negative experience. I thought it was kind of neat. I agreed to work with them. And I came back. I didn't say anything because I don't want the ridicule. I didn't go to see a psychologist because I didn't think it was any big thing. So what I'm learning is that all of these abduction tales that we've been hearing about are people who have had a negative experience, and they want to know what's happened to them, and they seek professional help or they go on the talk shows. And yet past them, there's apparently a significant number, maybe even an equal number of people who have had the same experience but don't have that, don't put that negative connotation on it, and they just say, hey, that's kind of neat, and they go on. Isn't that amazing?
Do you believe that there has been a deal between those that are visiting and our government with respect to abductions and human experimentation?
That is a very good question. And by the way, in my book, Alien Agenda, back in the chapter on remote viewing, I went to the American Association of Remote Viewers, and I commissioned, out of my own pocket, as far as I know, the first formal remote viewing study of UFOs. It was done totally blind. The people had no idea what they were even looking at. Mm-hmm. It was done with multiple viewers. It was done over a period of time with secondary questions and follow-up questions. It was done very scientifically, and you would be very amazed at what they came up with. And that was one of the questions. It does appear as if there has been some contact in the near past. But exactly what the extent of that is, how tangible that is, what the absolute deal was, is unclear, although it seems to be very simple. our certain elements within our government, mainly the military and intelligence chiefs that are involved in this, agreed to look the other way while these people did their medical experiments and their testing, and in exchange for technology. And there really can be little argument that there has been a literal explosion of technology since the early 50s,
right.
40s and early 50s.
That winds, of course, into the Colonel Corso story, which you were involved with.
Right.
And that also winds into another ongoing story with the American Computer Company. Do you know much about that?
Yes, I do. And that's going to be interesting to see how that tracks along. But now I need to caution everybody. We've got, again, this goes back to what we started off talking about. Everything's a deal. Nothing is always exactly what it seems to be. And I hate this because I'm a pretty straightforward guy. But that seems to be the way it is. And we have to be very careful about all this, okay? Because
Nobody's being careful about anything, Jim. Witness the Dallas Morning News story retraction already.
Oh, I know it. I know it. Don't they check their sources before they publish something? You know.
I'm astounded at what's going on right now. What is going on, by the way, with the American press? I mean, I've watched...
Well, there is no American press. Now, if you want to get me ranting and raving for several hours up on the soapbox, just get me to talking about the media. And I can do it because I came from it. I worked in it for half my lifetime. I know it. I've seen it from the editing suites in New York all the way down to the newspaper in Fort Worth, Texas. I know how the media operates, and there is no major news media. All there is big, sophisticated corporate advertising delivery systems. And they're totally dependent. And let me tell you how this works, because before you and your listeners start saying, well, this guy's just real paranoid and doesn't know what he's talking about, because I got a friend that works for the paper down there, nobody controls him or her, that's true. Let me tell you how it's done. It is not in the control of the individual reporters and editors out here in the TV and newspapers across this country. Most of them are good, honest, hardworking folks. The control is in the distribution of the information. Let me tell you a quick story. There's a fellow that worked for one of the major TV networks. And on the weekend, his job was to decide what he would take all the feed from the affiliates.
Sure.
And he'd decide what went on the wire, what went on the network feed that went back out to all the stations across the country.
Sure.
He said there was only two types of stories that he was required to get prior approval on before he could put them out on the feed. One was terrorism. Well, okay, I think you and I can understand where maybe there you have to be a little careful about what you say. Don't want to upset people, don't want to give away, dangerous knowledge of how to build a bomb or something. You know,
makes sense, sure.
Be a little careful.
Sure.
Okay. He said, but those stories generally all came back, occasionally with some minor editing, but mainly they all came back, and they'd go ahead and run the story. He said the second type was UFOs. And Art, those stories never came back. Never came back. And we've seen that happen just last year. You had the thing over Phoenix on March the 13th. Nobody outside of Phoenix much heard about it until June.
You're aware there's been a second set of sightings now?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I...
Again, flares.
Brace themselves, because there's going to be more.
Well, I've had a number of people make predictions that there will be a major daytime sighting over some big U.S. city. And shortly this year,
I think that's entirely possible, and that's what we really need to talk about, because for your listeners out there, the thing I here's what I'm fearful of is that there will be very soon some sort of a sighting, some sort of an event that the government cannot hide away. They can't rush in with their crash retrieval teams and pick up all the evidence and run off with it. They can't intimidate the witnesses into silence. It's going to be so big, it's going to be captured on film and news cameras that they can't deny it, and Art, that's when the real trouble is going to begin.
Wouldn't the phase on Mars do the trick? If the phase on Mars is
no,
is
it's
not
going to have to be something more immediate than that.
Well, but if it's not natural, if the new spacecraft we've got up there takes a look, and everything that Richard Hoagland has ever said,
uh-huh,
and others turns out to be true, and this was a product of some prior civilization. And is put there kind of like The pyramids and the Sphinx on Earth have been put here, but to be seen by space from us here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it going to change everything?
Absolutely. The teeter-totter of our worldview, our paradigm, is going to just, you know, drop from one side to the other. But what I'm getting at is this. This is the thing I fear. I think that if it's something that appears, say, above a major U.S. city, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like the Phoenix Lights, except in the daytime, and everybody can see it, and everybody can take pictures of it, and they can't deny it. I happen to know that the plans are already in place. At that point, the government will totally flip-flop. They'll come 180 degrees. They'll say, oops, they are here. It is real. And then they're going to play on the public fear and say, look, you're going to have to give up the last of your civil liberties so that we can protect you. And people who are not prepared for this and who have never really thought seriously about this, they're going to panic, and they're going to go for it. And I just say right now, tonight, to everybody listening, you need to inform yourself about this issue, and you need to get up to speed, so when that happens and they say, okay, now we're going to come in and we're going to take over, we're going to declare emergency, and we're, you know, you just say no. Just say no. We'll work it out.
All right. At a moment of crisis in the White House, like the one we've got right now, where this story is literally consuming everything that otherwise might be news,
right?
Would something like this fit right in?
Well, it would, and that's why, and again, you have to look at it from a balanced standpoint, because it can work either way. First off, I really do believe that there's secret, well, there's no question about it. I mean, Area 51 exists. There are things out there being tested. I mean, you can read about it in the aviation periodicals. You can read about it in Popular Science. I mean, very down-to-earth, conservative-type publication. They even say it's some very exotic technology being tested out there. There's no question about that. The question is, where does it come from? Is it strictly us? Are we just really developing some really, you know, high-tech stuff? Or as Bob Lazar and many other people have said, are we back engineering alien craft?
Well, what's happened with Colonel Corso? Where is that story?
Where is that story? Once the Pentagon's announcement, the Roswell thing died down, the whole, you know, you got everybody kind of interested in the UFO thing, and then it just died.
Yep.
Again, is the control over the distribution of the information. There's plenty of UFO stories going on. Mexico has been a hotbed of UFO activity for the last couple of years or more. You got things going on down in Brazil. You got all kinds of things happening. The first of the last year, there were some major sightings in the Atlanta area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
That's right.
And then the Phoenix thing, and then something up in, I'm vague on this, but something happened up around Boston. Okay? And yet, and I'm aware of that because I was traveling, and when I was in those areas, the local media would have a little bit of coverage about this stuff that's going on, but it never went anywhere else. And the people in Atlanta didn't know about Texas, people in Texas didn't know about Boston, and nobody knew about Phoenix until USA Today finally broke the story in June, three months later.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. There is no news media. I mean, I was taught basic journalism back in the 50s and 60s, and it was try to find the truth and present it to people, and that just seems to be by the boards today.
I'm astounded. You're absolutely right about the wire services. I would like to know who puts these stories together. You're absolutely right. A lot of the press is lazy. It's kind of a packed journalism, and everybody rips and reads.
That's right. Art, I call it magpie journalism, because they're like a bunch of magpies sitting on a fence, and you can shout at them and yell at them and throw a rock at them, and they just sit there. But, boy, you let one of them take off, and the rest of them are all after it.
How do you think this Dallas Morning News story broke? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. I've only heard the headlines. I would have to really study the story. I have no, you know, who knows? There, unfortunately, though, and this is what I'm trying to get to, too, this disinformation can occur on both sides. Has anybody ever considered that maybe some of this stuff is being orchestrated by Bill Clinton himself to get our minds off of something else? And I just raise that as a possibility. I don't know that's going on. In fact, actually, I think if you look through his whole presidency, once he got elected, and once he set off, he and his wife Hillary, and they all said, okay, it's time to really change some things and let's do things different. And they started talking about overhauling the health care system in this country,
yep.
which is abysmal. We got one of the lowest or one of the highest infant mortality rates in the world, which to me is unconscionable. How can little old dinky third world countries have lower infant mortality rates than the United States with all our technology and all our medical, you know, whiz bangs?
Even their technology. All right, Jim, hold on. When we come back, we're going to open the telephone lines. My guest is Jim Morris. His latest book is Alien Agenda, and we are talking about that and our secret government in the face of a withering news story about the president this morning.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
It is. And the news this morning is Lewinsky offers to cooperate with Kenneth Starr. The Dallas Morning News had run a story indicating a Secret Service agent ready to come forward and indicate that he had seen the president in action. That story is being withdrawn. Retracted, and so apparently is untrue. Otherwise, the Clinton story remaining fairly static this morning, still very much on top of the news. With the president's denial yesterday, hardly anything else is being talked about. However, here we are talking about other things. My guest is Jim Morris. He's author of Alien Agenda. He was a one-time employee reporter, investigative reporter for the Fort Worth Star Telegram, as a matter of fact, a competitor of the Dallas Morning News. So we'll get back to him in a moment. Seven.
After the sun goes down, after the stars come out, after dark, it's the world of Art Bell. Now, after dark is more than just a time beyond daylight. After dark is the definitive chronicle of nighttime radio, the Art Bell newsletter. And a fresh, exciting copy could be delivered right to your door every month. You've listened to Art on Coast to Coast AM, and you heard him on Dreamland. Now, for those who want more, there's After Dark. Every issue is packed with interviews, news analysis, photographs, many in color, hilarious cartoons, reader contributions, and, of course, Art's personal insights. That toll-free subscription number is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. The night has closed in. Art Bell is here, and so is After Dark.
All right, back now to Jim Morris. Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, here comes the public. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Good morning. Hello there.
Yeah.
Yes, are you there?
Yeah. Oh, you're asking the caller.
Yeah, absolutely. Caller, are you there? Apparently not, Jim. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Good morning. Oh, let's see what I'm doing wrong. I see what I'm doing wrong. Are you there, caller? I'm sorry, Jim. I had a wrong button pressed. East of the Rockies, now you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Mark and Clyde.
Yes.
I was curious on his opinion on the Seattle space junk.
Ah, yes. The re-entering space junk.
Well, again, you have to be careful of all these stories. There's so much things. You just can't believe everything that comes across on the media, because there's so much, so many things going on. You know, we don't know if it's space junk, and there's been things that have dropped into people's fields and houses and stuff all over the place. So you have to be careful and just kind of keep a wait-and-see attitude.
There you go. As a matter of fact, there has been a lot of there've been a lot of reports lately of goo going into people's yards. There was some of it up in the Seattle area, and there was some in New England here recently as well. Really strange junk. I have no idea what it is. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm calling from Santa Fe.
Yeah. Oh, New Mexico.
Yes. I actually just wanted to share an experience that I had. Hopefully, spread the word. You know. Me and about three friends went for a moonlight hike around 2 a.m. in the morning. This is about the summer of 96 on a mountain called Monte Sol. In the back there, we saw some flickering lights, sort of like a reflection off of a swimming pool. We knew there were houses back there, but we weren't so sure about the house being in that exact spot. Anyway, that night, a gentleman in the southern part of Santa Fe recorded 2.5 hours of video of a UFO flying around the city doing amazing feats of aerodynamics or whatever, you know, is most incredible. I thought it might be worthy of investigation. I went back to the mountain, looked back there. There was nothing but there but a field. Now, while we were there that night and witnessing the lights, a car drove up down a valley road, pulled up to a dirt road next to the field, did a bunch of strange maneuvers, pulling forward and backward, and then pulled back up to the top of the dirt road and left the opposite way that it came. Another car came up, did the exact same kind of thing, same type of maneuvers, pulled to the top of the road. Another car came back down. They both met, and they both left the direction that they came. The flickering lights would subside while the cars were there, but they wouldn't go out completely. It was probably the strangest things that I've seen. I didn't actually see the UFO flying over the city, but apparently the gentleman has video of it.
Saw the source of these lights?
No. We actually discussed going down to look at them.
Mm.
There were about three lights, major lights, that were in a triangular formation. And then occasionally there would seem to be little glimmers of smaller lights. But the whole effect was like a swimming pool, like light reflecting onto a wall from a swimming pool.
Oh, that's really interesting. Sort of a shimmering, cloaking kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
You heard a lot about that, Jim?
Yeah, there's a lot of reports like that. In fact, you know, for your listeners out there, any of them that are wondering if all this stuff's for real or if it's just nuts and kooks that report things, if they would simply let it be known around their family, their neighborhood, their work and stuff, that they're kind of interested in this and kind of wondering what's going on and are taking a non-judgmental stance on the whole thing, I think they'd be amazed at the number of people that would start coming forward to them and telling them similar type stories.
That's what this program is all about. We get it constantly, and I don't make fun of people. There are too many reports.
Of course not. In fact, here, let's carry this thing right back to what we started off here about President Clinton, this thing here. Tomorrow night, he goes on national television with his State of the Union address, and because of this scandal and everything that's going on, I venture to say that he'd probably have a larger than usual audience. What a wonderful time for him to crack the secrecy open about this whole thing, and maybe, you know, maybe not just come forward and say, yeah, it's real, it's here and there, but just enough to get people to thinking about it. I think everybody could agree that the fact of extraterrestrial intelligence visiting the Earth probably supersedes any kind of real or imagined sexual dalliance by the president.
Well, it sure does. And the State of the Union would be the perfect place for him to lay something like that out.
Right.
He actually could do that more easily than he could address the questions of the sexual dalliance.
Hey, and it would look where we're to put him in the history books.
Right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Yes. Is this me?
Yeah, it's you. Only you know that for sure, but I presume it's you.
Okay, great. I'd just like to relate an experience, and I have a question also.
Sure.
You mentioned that the lights over Phoenix had reappeared?
Oh, yes.
What? Approximately when did they reappear?
January. I'm sorry, I don't have the date. Do you know, Jim?
I don't have the precise date. It's been about, what, about a week ago?
Yeah.
Well, in December, we were driving south of Phoenix on I-8 from Tucson to San Diego. And what we saw was a very fast traveling object from the south to the north. It was at night, and the odd thing about it was it was so bright you could see the vapor trail behind it. And the trail wasn't a typical trail. It was more like a knotted, like knots in a rope.
Right. That would indicate some sort of a propulsion system that's actually creating small explosions.
Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of anything that's possible that could do that. Are you all?
Well, it brings us to the subject of this fast walker business. Things traveling through the atmosphere at 25,000 miles an hour and more. A story, very interesting story about NORAD not very long ago, Jim. Have you heard about that? Employees at NORAD?
About the fast walkers?
Well, there were some employees at NORAD that apparently, for some reason, according to the stories that I got, left NORAD and took their families and went to South America based on some sort of knowledge they had.
It sounds like the Gulf Breeze 6, doesn't it?
A little bit.
There's the thing. There's people. See, this is the thing. This secrecy has got to stop. I have too many sources within the military, within intelligence, and there's too many things that's cropped up. People in the military, people in intelligence, I mean, you can't keep this thing bottled up. People say, how can they keep it a secret? Well, they really can't. There's a lot of people that know, but they can keep the distribution of the information down so that we don't hear about it. Then we don't think it's happening. That's why it's so important. One of the steps that they're trying to do, Stephen Bassett, his group in Washington, is to offer a immunity from prosecution. The thing that's keeping so many of these people from coming forward and talking about it is the fear of violating their secrecy oaths, and those secrecy oaths are stringent. They say if you tell anything you learned while you were in the military or intelligence, we can throw your civil liberties in the trash can and put you in Leavenworth for the rest of your life. That's pretty stout. A lot of people take that seriously.
I was going to have Stephen back on, but then this whole horrible business with the president broke, and
right.
I thought poor Stephen Bassett is going to go nowhere fast for a little while here until something changes and there's some other news stories that begin to break.
Well, that's the whole thing, but I think that this is a story that's not going to go away. this UFO thing is just like everything else. It's picking up speed, it's gaining momentum, things are really happening, and by the way, before I forget about it, and I'll have people to chew me out, you can get Alien Agenda. It's got all of this in here. It's got everything we're talking about, including who's behind the secrecy. The flow chart of the organization that's in charge of the UFO question, as well as it addresses some of the questions as to, well, then what are they all about and what is the Alien Agenda. And you can get that, of course, at any major bookstore. Ask them to order if they don't have it. Or you can call it. I've got an 800 number I can give. Can I give it?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's an 800 number. Everybody grab your pencils. It's 1-800-905-8367.
Okay.
That's 905-8367. And they can pick up a telephone right now and order a copy. And the thing is, this book really was not written for the true believers, Art. I mean, you know, they're there, they're already, you know, no sense in preaching to the choir. This was written for the people who just are kind of wondering about, is there really anything to all of this? This is a book that was written to give to your parents, to your neighbors, to your friends who say, you don't really believe in that junk, do you? To somebody who's had an experience or knows that there's something going on. This is the book that's got it all between the two covers.
Colonel Corso, your part in the whole Corso story, what did you do and when did you do it?
Well, I've only kept up with the Corso story. In fact, his book came out about the same time mine did.
That's right.
And what it did was lend, of course, the two complement each other, because his book lends considerable weight to what I wrote in here about the government and military secrecy, and the fact that obviously something was going on, and my argument that something actually happened at Roswell. Of course, again, we do have to be careful, because there's so much going on. For instance, the thing at Roswell, there's no doubt in my mind that some sort of craft that was not a conventional craft crashed, okay? I don't think there's any question about that. Now, the question is, was it truly extraterrestrial, or has that been a cover story that's been mounted over the years? Because there's also evidence that we picked up some very sophisticated, advanced technological craft from the Germans at the end of World War II. They had flying saucers on the drawing board. There's no question about that. That's historical fact. Now, the question is, did they actually fly some? Were they really able to make them work? And that's what we don't know about. But there's a whole fascinating story that's covered in Alien Agenda about how the SS commander, who was in charge of their top secret projects, and disappeared. And along with what their top secret projects, well, leaving behind the V-2 rockets, which, of course, we got hold of, along with Von Braun and Dornberger and the rest of them, brought them back over to this country, and that's what started our missile program, right?
That is absolutely correct. So
what did this guy take off with? It was even more secret than that. It's a real issue. There's so much going on that we probably don't know about.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. This is Dan in Virginia.
Hi, Dan.
Art, I want to congratulate you on finally leaving the herd.
Until there is something to be stampeding about, I refuse to join in.
Well, that's fantastic, because we really need to get to the meat of what's really happening, and I think Jim's right on. Jim, you were getting ready to bring up a really important point before you didn't have a chance to finish it. It was concerning the what the president was saying about the desert.
The reverse speech interpretation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, let me finish that real quick then. Thank you for bringing that back up. That just kind of got set over to the side. Statement that apparently they got in analyzing with reverse speech was, he said, to hell with this, and keep in mind, this was when they were asking him about this sex scandal thing, and he says, to hell with the earth, the desert will answer, right? Which, you know, that doesn't sound like he's got anything at all to do with that. Apparently his mind's on other things, okay? And as I pointed out first, to hell with the earth, there is the interpretation that what he means by that is that the way that people, including presidents, have been muzzled over the years about this issue is to tell them that if they speak out, it could cause widespread social disruption and perhaps launch an invasion against the earth and destroy the earth. Well, that's pretty serious stuff. A lot of people think twice before they bring that up. But I think that that's just about played out its last, because it's obvious that there's nobody out there with an immediate goal of conquering the earth. Because if that was what they wanted to do, and if they had technology to the point to where they could go interstellar travel or go through walls or some of this stuff that's been reported that UFOs can do, knock out, you know, computers and all electromagnetic equipment, hey, they would have invaded us long before now, right?
And the reference to the desert?
Okay, so the thing is, to hell with the earth, to hell with this argument that I can't talk or it means destruction of the earth, the desert will answer. Where's Area 51? In the desert.
It sure is.
That's where the answers are.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with a man who has answers, Jim Morris. Hello.
Okay, this is John with Houston.
Yes.
Houston.
Oh, all right.
All right. What bothers me about the part about them dealing with our government is that why would they be the kind of race or civilization, whatever, that would want to cut such a deal with our government to, say, play around with us or use us for experiments or whatever, any kind of negative thing.
Right.
You know, if they were such an intelligent beings, it seems to me like they would come here for more nicer things than that. But I just hope that they don't think that we're like our government. You know, the rest of the world is like them.
Well, see, there, you just put your finger, I think, on what may be the real deal. Because when I'm talking about the government, we're not talking about the many hardworking postal employees or the Forest Service people or even those old IRS agents that are doing their job faithfully, you know, and even for, despite all the flack they get. We're talking about those handful of military and intelligence chiefs who are up there at the top of the pyramid, and they alone know what's going on, and they alone make the decisions. Now, they are not, you know, especially right now today, they're not very representative of the rest of us. And I think that's what happened is, and this is all covered in my book, Alien Agenda, is that they are in touch with a faction of an alien race, okay, that I guess I would best describe as the Hawks, okay? So the Hawks are dealing with the Hawks, and they're cutting their deals based on their own imperatives on the things they want done. Our guys want technology, they want that power, and they want to do their manipulation, possibly for their own self-preservation and survival, which could be one of the strongest imperatives going.
All right, Jim, hold tight, we'll be right back to you. Are we puppets? Are we players? Are our strings being yanked? This is Coast to Coast AM.
Leave me this way.
Kingdom of Nye, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. From east of the Rockies, call Art at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may fax Art at area code 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Do you have a computer? Do you have an IBM clone or an IBM? Well, if so, you don't have a fully functional computer without Snappy. I'm talking about the Snappy Video Snapshot from Play Incorporated. It grabs the most stunning photographs from any camcorder, TV, or VCR and puts them right into your PC. The total cost, $99. I use Snappy to get a lot of photographs using on my website. Not surprisingly, it turns out I'm not the only one who loves Snappy. The computer industry has gone wild for it. Snappy has won 25 major awards thus far. Nothing wins those kinds of awards. It just doesn't happen except with Snappy. Listen to what the computer experts are saying. PC Graphics and Video Magazine says Snappy is a revelation. The results, stunning. A product that everyone with a PC and camcorder simply has to have. A New Media Magazine says Snappy compares to a $20,000 digital camera. It is amazing. If you've got a PC, you've got to have a Snappy. You can put together photographic albums that just play in sequence on your computer. You can chronicle home movies and on and on and on. If there's video, Snappy can grab it. See them on the web at www.play.com. Or to get your Snappy, simply go to your favorite computer store and ask for it. It's $99. The new back now to Jim Mars. And Jim, you're not going to believe who I've got on the line. From Washington, D.C., here is Steve Bassett. Steve?
this is poor Steven, Art. How you doing?
I'm just fine.
Jim, I wanted to raise a couple things, but first I want to take this opportunity to publicly thank you for flying out from Dallas area to Phoenix on your own nickel, using up some of those precious book royalties to show the flag to Frances Emma Barwood in Phoenix on her press conference when she announced her candidacy.
She's a delightful lady, isn't she?
She's one of a kind. And Jim also attended some meetings afterwards, some think meetings we had to try to address some of the complicated issues that she's going to face. And now Jim's going to be a supporter of her through the campaign. This is the kind of personal commitment that you really have to appreciate in this field. Jim, you raised several things earlier, which I just had to talk to. And if the Honorable Gentleman from Texas will yield a few minutes to the Honorable Gentleman from Maryland, I'd like to address him if I could.
Sure.
First of all...
Well, I think what you may be getting into, Steve, would you agree with me that if President Clinton, regardless of his problems, if he was to come out and level with the American people, don't you think that he might be surprised at the breadth and depth of a constituency that he may find out here?
That's an understatement, but I think I'm going to go one step further. I think it's... I'm just going to let your listeners know that for the last 4 days, a very intense concerted effort has been underway to get information to the president's chief advisors.
I know that you... I've seen internet messages, Stephen, that you were desperately trying to get numbers for the president's advisors. What do you want to tell them?
I did receive help. Well, the message that we... and I say we, there's a number of people involved in this. I think you can probably guess who they are, too, but I don't want to speak for them. I want to be careful there, but I think I can say what I'm saying, namely that the message we are getting to the advisors is that there's a lot of agendas going on in this country that are very important, and ours is one of them. It's got a pretty long pedigree. It goes back about 50 years. I think the last 6 years are the most intense, and if this whole business results in somehow the removal of the president, it's a disaster for these agendas. This is not the way the country should be run. Now, so in that sense, we don't have any more axe to grind than anybody else. However, our agenda may have a special option for the president, namely this, that if he sees this moment in history and calls for the Congress to convene a hearing, not say what he thinks about UFOs or what he believes doesn't believe, but simply calls for the Congress to give these government witnesses their day in Congress, their opportunity to speak, and their opportunity to speak without fear of retribution, that the level of worldwide support will be nothing short of phenomenal. And I can't understate that. Now, we have pulled every stop we can. We have tried everything we can. We've crawled in the basement windows. We've hidden the bushes. We've done everything we could do. And I can say, tell your listeners, that this information, the facts and the material was gotten to the chief staff of Mrs. Clinton, a woman by the name of Melaine Verveer. It has gotten to the presidential chief of staff, Erskine Bowles. It has gotten to Bruce Lindsay. It has gone through some presidential personal supporters that are no longer with the White House. It's also thoroughly gotten to the attention of James Carville, who unfortunately is in Honduras for the inauguration of the Honduras president, or maybe to find a job for Mrs. Lewinsky, but whatever. The point is that the people in the government, I think, have gotten this information. And what will happen next, we don't know. One of the reasons I'm lying here tonight, not asleep, is because, well, because I like the Art Bell Show, but it's also because I'm so nervous about what could happen tomorrow that I cannot sleep. But
all right, in what respect, Stephen, what do you expect may happen tomorrow, and what windows have you been crawling through?
Well, what I mean by that is that we've used every connection that we can find, every number that we can get.
Sure.
And we have called and faxed and emailed and cajoled, and primarily have been able to get information into the White House. It's not easy to do, particularly when they're in battle mode like this. And so they know. In other words, members of the presidential top echelon know that there are people out there ready to come to Washington immediately to provide tangible, first-hand information and testimony so they could make a decision about whether President Clinton could launch this initiative at this State of the Union address. Now, what is important to this? Well, for one thing, it is, in our opinion, just about the only thing that might come into the picture at this point that would have the power and the implications to put this other business into a proper perspective so that possibly we won't be facing the ultimate consummation of this endless witch hunt. That doesn't mean that there may not be some problems here and there may not be some issues. The problem in this country is that we got everything upside down. We take the big stuff and we shove it under the rug and in the closets, and then we take the little stuff and we drive ourselves crazy with it. Well, this is a recipe for disaster. And so it's not impossible that this could happen. So I'm asking your listeners, look, get, you know, the email for the White House is president@whitehouse.gov. It's about as easy as it gets, president@whitehouse.gov. The vice president is vice.president@whitehouse.gov. And the first lady is first.lady@president.gov. And all this can be gotten on the Internet as well as fax numbers. Hit the White House tomorrow with everything you've got. Get every email in there you've got and tell them, look, we want a congressional hearing. We want the president to stand up for this. If he does, we are going to support him. Now, I can assure you that when the media sees the avalanche of support coming in from around the world, the emails, the faxes, the letters, after such an announcement is made, they will quickly turn their attention, which is not to diminish the legal issues that are here. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I'm not trying to say that this is totally irrelevant, but I'm just trying to say that they will immediately shift their attention to that. Now, once these congressional hearings are underway, I can say without a lot of fear of being embarrassed that after about the 15th or 20th witness, there will not be any more talk about impeaching the president. Because the American people are not going to sit by when they're hearing revelations of that implication and say, okay, let's get rid of the president. They will say, well, look, this is no time to be talking about that nonsense. And so the potential win-win situation here of enormous magnitude, I can't understate this, that in a sense history has kind of come together here and we have a moment of opportunity in which a very, very significant political dilemma, and I can assure you that even some of Clinton's, the detractors in the media, when they talk about potential impeachment, they're literally, you can almost see the depression in their face. They don't want to see this. Nixon tried to destroy the Constitution. You could almost justify what happened there. But to go to impeachment level of resignation on this is something that they can't even bear to contemplate. They are looking for a way out of this. We're saying, look, let's hit them with everything we've got. Same thing. Go to CSETI.org. Go to www.CSETI.org, Stephen Greer's site. Get the information on the committee chairman. Pump those faxes and emails into the committee chair people, because ultimately they still have to make the call. And let's make it absolutely clear that the support is there for a president to stand up and do something truly courageous. He has that kind of guts. I've seen him do it. So this is actually ongoing right now, and Jim is absolutely right in what he said about it. He's absolutely right that it will totally dramatically change the picture, and he's right about the level of support. I think one of the problems here is that people underestimate the power of the Internet. There's still so much misinformation about the Internet that a lot of people out there think that it's still some sort of a playground for perverts and people that don't have a life. They don't realize that the Internet is capable of generating 10, 15, 20 million responses.
Oh, yes.
If the issue warrants it. And I can't think of an issue that could warrant that level of response. So there is work being going on here. There are people ready to fly in and meet by phone, whatever. And I'll put out a call right now to anybody in the White House that's listening. Look, this is serious business. We do not want to see this president damaged. We do not want to see a change of government. This is not what we elected people to do. This is not why we spent $20 million in an election, or more than that, $200 million. We want to see our government do what it's supposed to do, not spin wheels and nitpick and fight over this kind of nonsense. It's partisan crap. It's ridiculous. So we want to seize the opportunity to make something good out of something that's negative. Now, the last thing I want to say, and I'll let Jim get the show that he so richly deserves, and that is that as far as the ad was intended to go in before the State of the Union address.
Right.
As it happened, there was a fairly healthy debate that developed with respect to the amnesty issue. This debate was waged primarily in the email world, so it wasn't too obvious, but it was intense, and it was, I thought, a very excellent and refreshing intellectual discourse, and it was resolved, and the wording has been changed, and that ad is done, but it cost a couple of weeks, and so no, it did not make it. Now, as it turned out, it's a good thing, because if that ad had gone in at the cost of $21,134, I should add, it would have literally been drowned out by this massive foo-faw that's come on. So that ad is going to go in, and it's going to go in after the State of the Union. My concern is this, that if President Clinton does get indicted, and that could easily be delayed. There's already been delaying actions that have been taken. If you probably heard, a judge has postponed the deposition. It's been postponed twice. So that could be delayed. It could be weeks from now. There was initial talk that it could have been as soon as this week. But if that indictment is delayed, that's a very good thing. And the job will be to get that ad in the paper before that indictment. And the reason is this. Once President Clinton is indicted, anything he does after that is poisoned by the criticism of total political artfulness.
Of course.
And so we're racing against time. Now to the issue that Jim also rightfully raised, isn't it interesting that when the real politicization of the UFO movement starts to really get some traction, and the meetings are taking place, and congressmen are engaged, and intelligence officers engaged, all of a sudden they really go to the last, they go to the last rung. They start wiring up female bureaucrats to tape their close friends in order to create almost a tabloid kind of scandal, something which even right-wing commentators have commented is really pushing the envelope. Now, the risk here was great. Understand that if this doesn't work, Mr. Starr is going to blow up. So they took an enormous risk here. It is a coincidence which I think deserves considerable scrutiny, though I do not have hard evidence that there is any connection. But boy, it sure makes me twitch.
Well, Starr is rolling the dice on the whole thing here.
Yes, he is. And so possibly, for your listeners, it's possible that this is part of what we call this last-ditch activities, which includes the potential destruction of records. We've raised that before. That as we get near the end, when you get an animal cornered, particularly a wild animal cornered, that's the time when you better be really, really careful. And so, yes, they're running out of room. I want to open back doors. I want to create ways for them to maneuver. Last thing I want to do, or Stephen Greer wants to do, or anybody wants to do, is put these people in a corner where they have nowhere to go. Don't want to do that. But the fact is that this is an extraordinary political crisis that came on out of nowhere. It is remarkable in at least seven different ways, and it's happening right at the moment that we are almost at the edge of launching the final drive for disclosure of the government's posture. So I think we need to show resolve, we need to show understanding, we need to show commitment, we need to fax the bejesus out of Washington, so that the message is crystal clear. If they choose not to act on this, I don't want it to be because they misunderstood the tenor of the public's interest in this.
All right.
And that's all I want to say. And, Jim, it's a fantastic show. There's nobody in this country that can convey complex ideas down in a down-to-earth fashion like Jim Marr.
Thank you very much, Stephen. You have a good night. Jim, I take it you concur with most of that.
Well, sure. Anything that would get us dealing with reality here rather than being whipsawed around by the spin doctors on whichever side they're coming from.
I've got a story here, and this goes right back to what you were saying. The mysterious face on Mars is, it says, not an optical illusion or a natural feature on the red planet. Dr. Tom Van Flanderen reached that conclusion after new studies of the Cydonia region, where strange-looking landforms have excited science fiction and life on other world buffs for decades now. The report presented at the 191st meeting of the American Astronomical Society attracted unusual attention because sharp new images of the face may soon be available. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration Global Surveyor spacecraft now orbiting Mars is scheduled to begin imaging in 1999. So they're saying it is not a natural thing.
That's right.
I mean, this is a remarkable, remarkable story that's being buried along with everything else underneath this terrible...
That's right. I don't want to wait another 3 months and have it suddenly appear in USA Today or whatever. Let's deal with things that are happening while they're happening. And, Art, I might tell you that in my study of government cover-ups and issues and stuff. This is the trick. You cannot, you know, truth will out. You cannot keep truth covered up forever. They know this. What they're trying to do is just stall it off long enough. It's just like the Kennedy assassination. Today, unlike 1968 or 63, today everybody, every thinking person knows that there's some real crap going on in regard to the Kennedy assassination, all right? And yet, so much time's gone by, and everybody reached that decision after such a long period of time that it's hard to get any kind of groundswell of public reaction, you know?
Of course.
Although they did. The House Assassination or the Assassination Records Review Board is still in operation and is still declassifying documents, and some of them are pretty incredible.
How much chance do you think there is that Stephen Bassett's pleadings will be heard, that the White House would consider this a moment to move forward, not step in reverse?
Well, of course, the problem with Stephen's plan is simply this. There is no problem with it. It makes sense. It seems like something that would be just so obvious and such a positive step that could be made, and from a very cynical viewpoint, something that could conceivably defuse this whole situation at the moment. But the bump in the road is that these people who have kept this secret for at least 50 years and possibly longer, these are dangerous folks. They have lots of power. They have lots of willpower, and they want what they want. And so I'm sure it would take some very serious soul-searching on the part of President Clinton for him to really seriously consider this. But I certainly think that it is something that he should take under consideration.
What do these people want, Jim? You talk about these people.
Right. In fact, let me make this statement right now. I think we, the American people, the public, I think we have more to fear from people within our own government, or let me put it this way, people, our own leaders, okay, than we do from space aliens. The space aliens, you know, in my book Alien Agenda, I go back and show that the evidence is very plain that, and certainly compelling, that the Earth has been visited by folks from not from this planet for millennia. Okay, it's nothing new, and they'll probably be coming around long after we're gone. The problem right now is the people who are leading us, the people that are running this world. Okay. And it comes back to the old bromide. The UFO lands, and the little guy gets out. What does he say, Art? He says, "Take me to your leader."
That's right.
Who is our leader? Who's running the show? If the president and the head of the CIA and the Joint Chiefs can't get to the information, then who's in charge? This is what we need to start focusing on.
All right, and so we shall. It is the top of the hour again. We're going to break. What a good question. Now, what's your answer? Who is running the show, yanking the strings, making and breaking presidents? This is Coast to Coast AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. And you may call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. To reach Art from outside the U.S., first dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is. For Valentine's Day, why not give your sweetheart the most romantic and unique gift in the universe, a star? A star named personally for your sweetheart. Brooke Shields has a star named for Andre. Oprah Winfrey, Tom Cruise, they've got personal stars. And now you can actually have a star officially named for your Valentine. I've got my own, so does my wife. Yes, it's true. Art and Ramona are really out of this world, and so can you be. For a mere $45, you can have a star named for anybody you wish. Listen carefully. I get a lot of email on this wanting the number. Call the International Star Registry at 1-800-282-3333. They will send a beautiful full-color parchment certificate of record, big too, sky charts to help locate the star, and a fascinating booklet on astronomy. Your new star name is entered in the registry's book and recorded with the U.S. Copyright Office. For more information, call toll-free 1-800-282-3333. Not a hard number. Mention my name when you call and get a free current edition of my newsletter After Dark. That number again, 1-800-282-3333. When it comes to information on ETs, if you're like me, you can't get enough. You need to see the spine-chilling video, Area 51, The Alien Interview. Thousands of you already have ordered this 65-minute documentary, which contains the most convincing color footage of government agents interviewing a space alien inside the infamous base at Area 51. Leaked to the public by a heavily disguised and frightened guy named Victor, this unedited video will leave your heart pounding. See for yourself why Victor fears government agents might kill him in retaliation for releasing this dramatic footage. Real? Judge for yourself. The cost? $19.95 plus shipping and handling. You're going to want to watch it over and over. I have. To call, to order, call 1-800-510-3420 right now. Allow 2 weeks for delivery. The video has been featured on Extra and Strange Universe. You can only get it through his offer. 1-800-510-3420. Area 51, The Alien Interview. In a moment, Jim Mars will be right back. What do you mean? Before, again, that nationwide number, 1-800-458-7134. Check them out on the internet at www.americangoldrose.com. Go ahead, treat your Valentine. Once again, here is Jim Mars. Jim, I just got a fax from Richard Hoagland, who suggested that earlier in the day he had talked with you about the David John Oates reversals.
That's what we've just discussed.
Uh-huh. And that the remark, to hell with the earth, the desert will answer, where that came from, he says that he kind of led you into that one. Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting interpretation of it. And, of course, you have to know the background, and you have to understand the threats that's been made over the years, and it's simply an interpretation. I mean, you know, who knows?
Yep, that's right. First time caller line. You're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Hi, this is Janine from Springfield, Illinois.
Hi there.
Great show.
Thank you.
Stephen Bassett almost stole my thunder earlier. I was quite interested in Jim's view on Frances Burwood and her announcement for Secretary of State and her platform about UFOs and looking into what we can do about it. And
open government, basically, is her platform.
Right, and so I'll hang up and listen to his comments, if he please share that with us.
All right. You did, I guess, as Stephen suggested, fly to Phoenix.
Yes, I did, and I met Frances Burwood, and she's just a delightful lady.
I know.
And very sharp and very concerned about what's going on, and exactly what I expected. And, of course, for those of your audience who may not understand, have all this in perspective, Frances Burwood, at the time of the Phoenix overflight early last year in March, was a city councilwoman in Phoenix. And she had the timidity to simply stand up. She's not a UFO buff or anything else. She said, as a city councilwoman, as a representative of a constituency there in Phoenix, she simply got up and asked the question, what was that? You know, what was it? If it was a government secret weapon, then let them say, hey, this is something secret and we can't tell you about it. We could accept that, but the government says nothing happened. There wasn't anything there. It's players. you know, the typical type thing. And then after that, the political repercussions came down. There, you know, she was getting bad mouth from the governor, from the talk show people there. And I watched this happen when she announced her candidacy for the Secretary of State there in Arizona. Here's the room full of media people. The three people from the local newspaper could only sit and snicker and chat with each other, and the only issue they seemed to care about, know anything about, evince any interest in, was along the lines of, what do you think about being the poster girl for UFOs?
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing. There was only one media person way back the back that, and I got the impression this man was with television perhaps, who asked basically some particular question, something about her policy on illegal aliens or something about the state. In other words, a serious question to a candidate who's announced for a statewide office. And I thought that was, you know, here's a real journalist, here's a real reporter asking questions about what really matters. And that's why I went out there, was to try to deflect some of this snickering and snide superior, better than thou attitude that comes across on the part of some of these media people who hide out in their white ivory towers during the day, never get out and pound the pavement, never go down and talk to the secretaries and the cab drivers and the cop on the beat to find out what's going on, and yet they have this idea that they know better than anybody else, you know, what the score is.
All right, good, Jim. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Mr. White in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, sir.
Yes, basically, regarding the Francis Barwood situation, I'm here in Phoenix, Arizona, so I've had the opportunity to experience that firsthand.
Right.
And basically, they were giving you a hard time, Art, because Barry Young was saying, well, she shouldn't be on a nationwide radio show because it only concerns Arizona.
I mean, really?
I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's not all right. I'm used to getting a hard time from people.
Yeah. But that's not why I called. I called because of after the reports of the UFOs in Phoenix, I concluded that the media accepts the government response without any question, and in turn the general populace accepts the media's report without questioning. So my question to you, Jim, is, are we as a society, in your estimation, becoming apathetic?
I would say no. Not truly apathetic. Apathetic means you really just don't care. Okay?
Right.
And I cannot bring myself to believe that all of my fellow Americans out there really don't care. What it is, I think, is a very natural psychological response. Psychologists will tell you, you know, when they do testing and stuff, if you get a person confused, one person says one thing, one charge, countercharge, claim and counterclaim, when they start getting confused, they tend to turn off. They say, oh, wait a minute, let's talk about something else. I don't want to hear this anymore.
Mm.
Okay? And I think that's what's going on. But do you understand that that's different from truly not caring?
Oh, I do, but it's just that I've talked to so many people, and the vast majority of them have no opinion at all.
Well, there definitely is the dumbing down of this nation. And again, it comes back to the news media. The news media cannot tell us how to think, but it certainly tells us what to think about.
I agree.
All right, thank you very much. It certainly is doing that right now.
Isn't that the truth? Thank you, Art, for injecting a little bit of rationality into this. And, you know, let's step out of the stampede for a little bit and watch and see where it's going before we decide if we want to join or not.
It's the only way to get perspective. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Good morning.
Good morning. Calling from Cincinnati. I think you brought up the point that the media is the problem, and the media is really owned by big business. It's owned by industrial complex. And
absolutely. You got General Electric, and you got Westinghouse that owns two of the major networks. And these are the largest producers of arms in the world, which, you know, we don't really like to think about this, but in this country today, 1998, in a world supposedly at general peace, we are the largest arms dealers in the world.
Sure,
this country, our country. And do you think those people want to, do you think they're going to allow those networks to tell you that constantly?
Well, that's it. You read the book Unreliable Sources, it brings that up. But your book, Crossfire, along with others that I don't think are disinformation, books like Mark Lane's and Jim Garrison, shows evidence of that CIA military-industrial complex involvement in the Kennedy assassination because he was going to get out of Vietnam, splinter the CIA, and make normal relations with Cuba. But I think some people compartmentalize that and don't see the relevance to the present CIA military-industrial complex warmongering over Iraq, for instance. Even though Clinton is a right-winger, he got as much military-industrial money as the Republicans, he has been a slightly less rabid warmonger, even though he's gone along with the Bush policy of starving a million Iraqi men, women, and children to death, and saber rattling and occasionally bombing. You look at the forces arrayed against him, they are even more rabid, such as the Richard Mellon Scaife, a billionaire who has huge holdings in the Lockheed Martin Marietta military-industrial complex and cold armaments. He's funding, he's closely associated with Kenneth Starr, funded many of these right-wing organizations that constantly try to scare us about rogue states, terrorist threats to keep us in a proper frame of mind for huge military budgets and these interventions against countries that don't obey the dictates of these transnational corporations. And I think that's what's going on right now, where they pushed Clinton to try to appease them by starting a war against Iraq.
All right, well, here's a good question. Is the president, in effect, being punished for something he did not do or something he was about to do? These are the kinds of questions that came up, of course, with the Kennedy assassination, and now I think reasonably might be asked with respect to Clinton. Is he being punished? Is he being taken out for some reason?
Well, it's obviously he's being neutralized. I mean, you know, rightly, wrongly, whatever. Let's face it. Look what's happening right now. I mean, you know, the media in the is leading the charge, and everybody's concerned over his sexual picadillos.
Mm.
Who's minding the store in the meantime?
Well, yes, they are, and no, they're not. On the one hand, over 60% of the American public does not think the president ought to have to leave office if it's just purely a sexual matter with a 21-year-old aide.
Well, but that's not that can't be the grounds for impeachment anyway. The grounds for impeachment would have to be this, you know, suborning of testimony.
Yeah, of course,
trying to get her alive, you know.
Yeah, of course. But is he more of more use to those who want him neutralized? Paralyzed.
Well, let me give you a little example. The example in our recent past about how that messages can be sent to the President of the United States. In the spring of 1979, Jimmy Carter was knew that he was getting ready to go into the election year of 1980, and it was well known by at that point that Ronald Reagan was going to be the Republican candidate, and that,
sure.
and that he was conservative, and that everybody was calling Jimmy Carter wishy-washy. So Jimmy Carter asked for national TV time, and it was thought he was going to come on and announce some sweeping programs and some changes in government and build up a track record there to go into the 80 elections. Well, before that can happen, he goes to Los Angeles, and they arrest two men out there, an Anglo and a Hispanic, and said, no, it's no big thing. They were just derelicts, bums off the street. But a week later, they carried a small story in my paper that said these two guys were being held in lieu of $500,000 bond.
Wow.
And charged with attempted assassination of the President of the United States. Okay? Now, Carter canceled his nationwide TV talk, went into seclusion at Camp David, was reported as saying that he had lost control of the government, didn't do anything, and of course lost to the Reagan steamroller there in 1980. Now, here's the clincher. The two guys that they arrested were Raymond Lee Harvey and Oswaldo Ortiz. Lee Harvey and Oz Waldo were going to assassinate Carter there in Los Angeles. And this story made an article, by the way, in Newsweek. It did hit, but it didn't really go anywhere. Nobody really caught it. But don't you think that's a message? How much coincidence is that?
That's a message, all right. And that is one I missed, too, somehow. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Yeah, good evening, Art and Jim. The question, I'll lead up to it here. About three nights ago, either late night or early morning, I was watching Discovery Channel, and there was some oceanographic researchers, and they were sitting somewhere a few thousand miles from anything in the middle of the South Pacific, and what they were doing was they got an ocean crawler at approximately 10,000-foot depth, and they had a hydrophone on it, and they were trying to identify little animals and everything that runs around there, and they could identify everything but one thing, and they put the tone on the air, and what it sounded like was a high-frequency generator, kind of a woo-woo-woo, and it was consistent, and it wasn't moving, okay? And at first, never thought about it too much, except it wasn't moving. And I would happen to think of the things I've read and so forth. They've seen the things that were unidentified that have dropped into, into the Bermuda Triangle, but also in the South Pacific. And I wondered what your take on that was. Unidentified.
Yeah, I'm like you. The thing that intrigues me most is the fact that it was not moving. Because it's always possible that, like, some kind of deep-sea creature, even a whale or something, might could be making a sound, something similar to that, but it would be in motion. Well, in Alien Agenda, in my book Alien Agenda, I cover all bases, and one of them has to do with the fact that there have been many, many reports of UFOs that, slide into or splash into the water and go right on. And there is a lot of speculation about the idea that there may be bases
under the water,
under the ocean.
Yeah. Does Mr. Mars foresee contact by an alien faction with average people that would counter the government contact that is in place now? Any hints of this?
Oh, well, I think that seems to be somewhat obvious just on the face of it. I think that there is look at the crop circles. That is obviously, now, of course, first off, yes, there are some hoaxed crop circles, but they are very obvious to detect, because if two old boys and a string and a board go out and stop down a circle in the ground, you've got broken crop, you've got crushed leaves and you've got broken stems. In the true crop circles, the crop is laid over at a 90 degree angle, often intertwined, sometimes braided, and laid on layers that go in opposite directions, and yet the crop is not dead. It continues to grow, but in a horizontal position, and will never grow upright again.
With molecular change in the crop.
Yes, at the cellular level.
That's right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Hi, this is Lisa. I'm calling you from Glendora.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi. Great program tonight. Listen, I wanted to ask Jim or yourself if you know what happened to the Glomar Explorer that Howard Hughes built. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Now,
well, yes, I do know what happened to it. And,
what happened?
And it was built as an underwater ocean thing, but in reality, it was built to raise a sunken Soviet submarine.
That's right. Wasn't it used for that, as a matter of fact?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was used for. In fact, that was why it was built. The whole thing about going out and studying the oceans, that was just a cover story.
Huh. Is the Cold War over, Jim?
Yeah, the old confrontation between the Soviets and us, I think obviously that's changed radically. In fact, this is what's presenting the problem. See, they need the people who are the arms dealers and their financiers and all like that. These guys, they really need some trouble so that they can continue business as usual. And that's kind of a bad situation, because then every little hot spot becomes a United Nations battleground. When President Clinton first ordered troops into Bosnia, I told everybody would listen. I said, those guys aren't coming back. They're not going to pull them out of there. And sure enough, now he's announced that, yeah, they're in for the duration, whatever that is.
Well, Surely, if they were pulled out, the fighting would resume in Bosnia.
Probably so, but, you know, it's, you've got the same situation in Ireland. You know, if the British pulled out, Catholics and Protestants would be at each other's throats again.
Absolutely true. So the people who make the arms are pulling
the United Nations isn't going in there.
No, they're ready to go into Iraq. So, again, though, the people who make the arms, Jim, are the ones pulling the strings. Is that right?
Probably so. You're talking about the people with the heavy bucks and the people. You know, I could name names, but it wouldn't mean anything to most people. You wouldn't know these names. The people who are really in charge, you rarely even hear about.
All right, Jim, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Time flies. This is Coast to Coast AM.
With Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA, then 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
All right. You've got nothing to lose but the pain. All right, back now to Jim Mars. And you looked, you studied President Kennedy quite extensively. What
right.
did President Kennedy, if anything, know about this whole alien UFO question?
It's in my book, Alien Agenda.
Yes, sir.
I got a little section called JFK, Maryland, and the UFOs.
Maryland and the UFOs.
Yep. I have in my possession a copy of what appears to be a CIA report, and it was done in the summer of 1962, and it was a telephone wiretap between the famous reporter Dorothy Kilgallen and a friend of hers in Hollywood. And the friend of hers was telling her that Marilyn Monroe was causing quite a stink and felt like she'd been jilted by the Kennedys and was threatening to hold a press conference and go public with some secrets. And the very first secret listed was the fact that she said Kennedy had told her he had been taken to a secret base and shown things from space.
So he knew a lot.
He knew a lot. I also quote in there a man by the name of Bill Holden, who was a steward aboard Air Force One, and he quotes Kennedy as saying in the summer of 1963, they were in Europe. You know, remember when he made his trip over there and made the famous Benang Berliner speech?
Of course.
And they said there was a UFO conference taking place in Bonn, Germany, and so there was something about it in the newspapers. And he said Kennedy was pretty approachable, and he said, "Mr. President," he said, "what do you think about UFOs?" Something to that effect. And he said Kennedy got serious, thought a minute, and said, and this was his quote, and this is intriguing to me, and I'm sure it will be to you. He said, Kennedy said, "I would like to tell the people about the alien situation, but my hands are tied."
Let me tell you a little story about Jimmy Carter. I had a call from, just a regular listener, Jim, who said that he went to a book signing of Jimmy Carter's. And, of course, Jimmy Carter, in his campaign, had said that he would reveal what he could find out about UFOs if
right.
he got into office.
Right.
Well, this fellow went up to Jimmy Carter, who was keeping his head down, you know the way you are at a book signing, just signing
right.
one after another, and managed to capture his eye attention and asked Jimmy Carter, "Mr. President, what can you tell us about UFOs now that you're actually out of office? And the president looked up with actually a tear in his eye and made no comment at all, but was obviously very moved and knew something.
Right. But see, you have to ask yourself, well, where what is their source of information? Who's telling them, and are they telling them the real truth or the military's truth? This is like Corso, you know, makes the argument that it was all necessary. The secrecy and the gaining the technology was all necessary because these aliens are bad and terrible and they're our enemy, and he had to save the Earth. In fact, I believe he almost says that in the tail end of his book. He said he saved humanity or something like that.
Right.
Well, you know, I had to ask. I said, you know, why? You know, what made you think these aliens are our enemies and are terrible? And you know the response? And this is typical Cold War mentality. Well, they flew over our prohibited airspace, and they hovered over our military installations, and they wouldn't stop when we said stop. That makes them our enemy.
It does. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Hi, Mr. Bell.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Morris.
Yeah,
I have two quick questions. One on Area 51, and Mr. Bell, I'd like to ask you a question about your website.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Morris, I was online in a chat room, and there was a gentleman who came up with a conspiracy that the government was going to close up Area 51 and bury it under cement. Have you heard anything about that?
I think I've heard that story. I've also heard the story that they've moved Area 51. You know, keep in mind, if you were in charge of protecting the security at Area 51, wouldn't you put out all kinds of stories like that just to keep everybody confused?
Definitely, most definitely. I would do that.
So,
that's what they're doing now. I feel that, you know, they're confusing us all coming up with all these theories.
Well, but I'll tell you what, I saw some footage of those airplanes that take off every morning and evening and take those workers out there and then bring them back. And those planes are still flying. So I would take with a great grain of salt the idea that they've buried Area 51 or that it's no longer in operation.
Okay, thank you for that. Mr. Bell.
Yes.
I can't get to you online. I'm on AOL right at the present time.
Right.
How do I get to your website from AOL? I don't know.
Well, you can get on the web, right?
I'm having a hard time.
From AOL? Well, in the AOL program, if you just look up at the top, there's a picture of the globe, the Internet.
Right.
All right. You just click on that, and then you enter www.artbell.com.
I've been doing artbell.com. I haven't put in...
The World Wide Web, www.
Right.
All right.
Okay, well, I'm new at it. I'm sorry about that.
Well, congratulations. Good luck. Actually, if you want the whole thing, it's http://www.artbell.com. That is the official way to get there. First-time callers, area 702-727-1222.
Phoenix, and I was wondering, Jim, do you think that maybe the alien species, do you maybe think that they're a future evolution of us in the future?
Okay. All right, this is interesting. Again, I hate to sound commercial, but I refer you to Alien Agenda. I cover all bases here. What seems to be going on here and what causes a lot of confusion is that there are multiple races out there, okay? And, in fact, let me put it this way. Are they from Zeta Reticula? Are they from Alpha Centauri? Are they from the Pleiades? Are they from another time? Are they from another dimension? Okay, and the answer is yes. you got all this stuff going on. There's a big, wide universe out there, and our particular solar system and our little planet is just this little, you know, one little planet around a third-rate sun out on in the boondocks of the galaxy out here, kind of out on the fringe. So there is so much stuff going on, and we are only just now becoming aware of it. It's just like the remote viewing, you know. This has been scientifically proved, but this is just cracking the door on stuff because... Up until recently, you know, everybody just thought psychic stuff just, you know, did not exist. The quantum mechanics, we're making dimensions. It used to be there were no dimensions other than our three dimensions, but now they pretty well understand there's at least a fourth dimension, which most people consider maybe time. And now some of the leading theoreticians are saying there may be as many as 10 dimensions. So now they're admitting to perhaps 10. Well, if there's 10, maybe there's 20 or 2,000. Who knows? We are just now beginning to understand and grasp a little bit of what's going on. We are, I would say the human race at this point in time is kind of like a teenager. We've pulled ourselves out of the dark ages a little bit, but we certainly don't know everything that's going on. And when you look back at technology, only say 100 years ago, if you were to take a modern color handheld color television set and take it back with a battery and a tape or something so you could play something, go back only 100 years and show it to the average person, they would probably just cower and cringe, and they'd say, my God, this is magic, you know, what's going on, and think it was some kind of magical thing. So it's really pretty incredible. So you can see where that if somebody was maybe just 100 years ahead of us, they would probably. In fact, just within my own lifetime, I can remember back in college in the 60s studying computer science. And we had to, you had to have these punch-out cards. It was just terrible. It was big and funky and unwieldy and big hassle. And I said, yeah, forget this. And now, of course, now I've got, you've got these little laptop computers and you can use your finger and dial around. And, I mean, it's just, it's magical, really. But you grow up with it and you understand it, you use it, and you forget about it. And I get very upset with my computer right now, and because I think here's this sophisticated, state of the art piece of thing, and it won't do what I want it to do. And then I have to remind myself, you know, computer science, even today with all the marvels we have and modems and email and the internet, this is just the infancy of it. We're just now getting into this. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, and computers are also developing every year. They're always coming out with new stuff for them.
Yeah, every 6 months, everything's obsolete.
Right, and everything, it's like you have to keep upgrading. I have a system at home, which I'm planning to get back running. But also, I was in Sedona about a week ago, and there was a lot of sightings out there in the skies, and also there was a lot of negativity about that vortex. I don't know if you know anything about the vortex out there, but
I do. And what do you mean negativity?
Well, like in the daytime, it would be fine because it's pure daylight burning through everything. But when you drive around out there, up at where I don't know if it's Bell Rock or if it's the other one by the airport motel right there, there was a lot of negative energy out there, and I don't know where it was coming from, but it wasn't really good.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Have you done any looking into this whole question of vortexes, Jim?
Not to any great extent, but I do know what you're talking about, and I do know that there are certain energy, there is an energy thing. We are, again, back to what I was saying about how we're just now scratching the surface of some scientific knowledge and things that seem to be just magical to us, or we will probably understand more fully in a few hundred years. But this thing about energy, you always hear, I remember the hippies were always going, oh, it's the vibes, man, it's the vibrations. Well, they really were onto something, because we're finding out that the human brain and human nervous system operates at certain frequencies, and yet you can manipulate it by using certain frequencies. And we should have known this all along, because all you got to do is go in a dance club, and if the music's really pounding, I mean, it can either get you up, or if they're playing some blues, they can kind of bring you down. And we're beginning to understand this now, and so there is something to this vibratory and vibration thing. It can impact upon us, and there are certain areas. There's certain areas, particularly around military installations and security installations, where the atmosphere is just kind of palpable. You can just tell that there's a lot of negative energy there, a lot of very heavy energy going on, and I think it's because so many people there are concerned with security, and they're fearful, and they're borderline paranoid. They're so concerned with it that they think everybody's out to get them.
Mm-hmm. First time caller line. You're on the air with Jim Mars. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Tim. Listen, I got a story that happened to me that I'd really like to tell you what happened. I was working in upstate New York and as a security guard. And, hello?
Yeah,
I'm listening.
We're listening.
And I saw sort of one night these lights coming down. It was like 3:30 in the morning, these lights. And I went over there to see what happened. And there was this thing, big round thing down there. And I spoke to these people that came out. Now, these weren't human beings. I promise you, they were not human. Okay, and
what did they look like?
They were, I don't know. I don't even remember exactly. I was like in a state of shock, and I was talking to them. I was not talking to them in English, and it was a language I never heard of before. And I was just able to understand what they were saying. I really, it was like a shocking thing that happened to me. And, you know, and they were telling me that they're not from this universe even. They're not even from, you know, from anything that we even see, we ever heard of before. And they would, you know, and I asked them, you know, what does this mean? You know, where are you from? What? And they said that they're basically going around from planet to planet. And they said that in any universe that we ever heard of, that there's no living things. So, like, all these things on Mars and whatever, from what they were telling me, is not true. Now, I don't know for sure if they were on Mars or anything. I don't know exactly, you know, but from what they told me, I mean, what do you say to all this?
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. They told you there was no other life?
That's what they told me. They told me there is other life. I mean, they obviously came from somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Not at any, you know, universe that we ever heard of. Like, they were from way out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's entirely possible. It's a huge, big universe. Dave Morehouse, I love it. He calls them intergalactic boat people. Yeah.
Boat.
They ain't got anything going much at home, so they just go out and travel around and see what's going on. And they come and check us out occasionally. But I remember when I was living out in Lubbock, Texas. Lubbock's a great place with a lot of fine people, but the dust and the desert and the heat and there's not much to do, and it's really not a great place. And so for entertainment, lots of times we go out and look at the prairie dogs. And a little prairie dog village, you know, and the little prairie dogs just scamper all around doing their little things. And people would come out on the weekends and on afternoons, they watch the prairie dogs. Well, I think some of these people are coming here visiting us. They're coming to look at the prairie dogs.
Look at the prairie dogs. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
Mr. Morris, I got a question for you, and just bear with me so I can get my view across, and then I'll take your answer off the air. Now, the one caller kind of took my thunder a little bit there, but it led to another question. If the government's, we're stating the government's doing a big cover-up with these aliens. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's just a thought. Could it possibly be, with all these preachings in the past and all that, I mean, a wheel within a wheel, et cetera, that maybe the reason the government's covering up because these crashes, let's say, hypothetically speaking, they could be of a God, what we call God, and yet the government don't want us to know that we're greater than God? And I'll take your answer off the air.
All right. Good luck with that one, Jim.
Oh, boy. Well, let me preface this by saying that I consider myself a Christian. And I am a church member. I think there is some tie-in here. For instance, the remote viewers say that some of the beings that they encountered were essentially what they call light beings or transcendentals. Others have called them disincorporates, light beings, energy beings, okay? However, here's what's interesting. I don't think that the UFO issue or the extraterrestrial issue should in any way adversely impact us as far as the concept of God, creator God goes, because the abductees, for instance, or contactees, many of them have asked and have gotten pretty much the same answer. One lady who was a devout Christian kept asking her captor, said, are you from God? Are you from God? And finally one of them said, look, our God is your God. And I think that's probably it. The God is the God of the universe. He creates the universe, and he'd be the God over all of us, including extraterrestrials. The only place where the UFO issue is liable to really kind of cause a problem is strictly in this very egocentric idea that we are the apex of civilization and we are the high point of God's creativity. And I think that limits God, really. I don't think, and that particular concept, by the way, is not biblical. There's nothing in the Bible that says, you know, we're it. That concept came about just within the last several hundred years, and so that's probably going to take some adjustment, and there may be some ego deflation going on when we find out that not only are we not the only intelligent race in the universe, but we may not be the brightest or the most knowledgeable.
Do you think that we could handle that? That's where we always go with Brookings. In other words, we are not the center of everything. We are not the brightest. We are not, as a matter of fact, even a type one civilization. We're just sort of in the outskirts and going nowhere fast.
Kind of second class citizens.
That's right.
Well, Art, let me just put it this way. Doesn't about 90% of us have to deal with that in our lifetime anyway?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, we do.
Of course. If you're in a schoolroom, there's always the bright one that makes 100 on the test, and then everybody else trails along somewhere down behind. And that doesn't mean that they end their life or get despondent or go into deep depression. You just have to, you know, do your thing and go on.
Is all of this going to come out in our lifetimes?
I am firmly convinced it will. I am firmly convinced it will. I was not so sure up until about 10 years ago, but I really think things are barreling ahead so fast. Things are coming to a head so fast. Things have got to change, and things are changing, you know. Back in the early 70s, I looked forward and I said, you know, there's going to be some real earth changes taking place, and the amazing thing, Art, is that they have actually taken place, starting with Mount St. Helens. We've had five major volcanic eruptions on the North American continent. This was something that had never happened before in recorded history. And then we've had the worst, and just in the last 10 years, we've had the worst hurricanes. We've had the worst tornadoes. The numbers of these things have increased. We've had major earthquakes and more on the way. All this stuff's happening, but it you don't read about it in your newspaper, and you don't hear about it on the 5 o'clock news, except just as, you know, one thing happens, you hear about that, and then 6 months later, you hear about something else.
Indeed. Jim, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Phased in for a while. It's not here in the New Orleans area. It was around the 60s, from 60s forward. There's a lot of, it's a very religious area, I might add.
Oh.
Very, very religious area, very sober area, dry counties, if you will. It's very interesting to me, and whittened my appetite. So I made a little jaunt up there this past year and found a lot of articles. And I found an elderly gentleman that worked with people that had, as I say there, this is a very religious area. He worked with people. He took a very strong interest in it, and I spoke with him. And he says, I've been following this since the mid-40s. Hmm. And
all right, well, if you can't tell us any more, then contact Jim privately.
Yes, I'd like to do that if I could get a some sort of a number or something like that.
All right, let's see what we can do for you on that score. Jim, if people want to contact you, is there a way to do it?
I'll tell you what, I'll leave you my number. The problem is the only number I got is my number. You know,
I'm sorry, right, don't give that out. What
everything else. So, yeah, let me leave that with you, Art, and then...
Don't do that. How about an address? He could write to you.
Sure.
All right.
Sure. Okay. Post Office Box 189, Springtown, Texas.
189, Springtown, Texas?
One word, Springtown, Texas, 76082.
76082. Jim Mars, P.O. Box 189, Springtown, Texas, 76082.
Yep.
All right, good. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Mars from Springtown, Texas.
Wildcard Line?
Yes.
This is Carolyn in Phoenix.
Hi there.
And it's time to reveal what all of this is about.
You're right.
And I'm excited, and I'm anxious, and I'm in love. It's bring the light of God back into the White House, and the lights over Phoenix are the resurrection of Phoenix, which is my beloved Bernard J. Addington, and he needs to come out on front stage, and it has been, Jim, about 12 years since this was revealed. And I learned the truth about us. He is the truth, the justice, and the light from light, true God from true God, and our true president, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and I love him very much. And I wish he would come back in the flesh so that we can all see him and he can be in the White House.
Huh?
There's a lot...
Excuse me, ma'am, but...
He is the light over Phoenix.
Who is?
Bernie. Bernard J. Addington.
Who is that?
He is God. King of kings, the Lord of lords, the true president and CEO of planet Earth, and he comes in the flesh, and he also comes from the light.
Jim, do you know who she's talking about?
I think I missed that one.
Yeah, I'm afraid I've missed it too.
But he was the light.
Come, Bernie, and if in Revelations you hear, come, Lord Jesus.
All right, well, that person I understand, but Addington, I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hello.
Yes, sir. I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, sir.
I have a question for Mr. Morris.
All right.
Uh-huh. Do you know the definition for religion?
Do I have a definition for religion?
Do you know the true definition for religion?
Are we talking religion or are we talking spirituality?
I'm reading from the Random House College Dictionary.
Uh-huh.
The definition for religion is a set of beliefs concerning the cause, nature, and purpose of the universe, especially when considered as the creation of a superhuman agency or agencies, usually involving devotional and ritual observances and often having a moral code for the conduct of human affairs.
And where are you going with this?
I have my possession some information from CG issue. CG is social, economical, environmental, geometrical, and intellectual issues and concepts.
Mm-hmm.
This information was transmitted to me by DJOP SPA Incorporated, an organization formed with the purpose of participating and educating the masses in a more positive social, economical, environmental, geometrical, intellectual way. The origin of this organization dates way back to before I was born. I and others like me are merely conduits of a source power that is God himself. We serve him through our daily activities with the blessings of Jesus Christ.
All right. Well, here we are again, Jim. Religion, belief systems, people are drifting to... I guess they're, you know, the basis of their belief systems, and a lot of them are going to religion.
That's true. And again, I happen to believe that there is a universal creator, God, and I do believe that there are spiritual matters that we need to be dealing with. But unfortunately, so many people turn to gurus, leaders, whatever, seeking guidance. They want somebody to tell them what to do and how to live their life, and that's I think that's where they get off the track. I think that God gave us a onboard computer, which we call the brain, and I think we need to all use that and figure things out for ourselves and learn to take care of ourselves.
I wonder sometimes about their presence, whether they're really not here, whether we just want and we're reaching out and hoping for somebody who will come and save our butts, and they really won't, that we have free will and they're going to sit back there and just sort of watch us destroy ourselves.
Well, are you saying that perhaps there's nothing there, that it's just our imagination?
It's occurred to me.
Hopes?
It's occurred to me.
It's occurred to me, too. So I seriously considered that for years. But I'll tell you what, the two things that convinced me otherwise are, number one, the advent of the camcorder. You know, there's hardly a week goes by that somebody doesn't get a good picture of a UFO. Well, obviously, you can't take a picture of a hallucination or a dream or whatever. So they represent some sort of tangible, objective reality. The second thing, of course, well, again, was the military scientific studied and used remote viewing. They've seen them. They've been there. Let me tell you a little story that's pretty spooky, but this helps convince me that this is all very real. Back some time back when that program Stargate was in operation, you had Mel Riley, who was one of the original, I call him the PSI, PSI spies.
Sure.
And he is very, very good and became a very, very good remote viewer. And he told me the story one time, in fact, gave me a copy of the report they did. They realized after looking at all this stuff that it was not just willy-nilly and happenstance. In other words, these craft are coming from somewhere, they're going somewhere, they've got some agenda. And they realized that for all of this to be somehow in concert, for certain things to be going on, for instance, it's obvious that they all have one rule, which is to don't give away the presence in an obvious manner here. That there's some sort of concerted effort going on. There is, and so that means there is some sort of a overall authority behind all this. In other words, what they were seeing was not just happenstance. There was some sort of rhyme and reason going on to it. And so they decided they were going to take a remote viewing session and try to find the central authority. They said, "Why we keep seeing this and this and this, and we're having a hard time putting it all together and trying to understand it. Let's just go to the source. Let's go to the authority and find out what's going on." And so they targeted Mel Riley to go to for, and keep in mind this was just a description. They had no other way to describe it other than to call it Galactic Headquarters. Okay?
Right.
So he takes off. And in his mind's eye, he visits this place. It's a very definite place. It's on another world. He saw a ziggurat, a pyramid-type building with a long runway running up to it and two big obelisks on each side. And it was up on a high mountain plateau with huge mountains all around and a very still, quiet lake, which reminded him of pictures he had seen of Lake Titicaca, okay? And he goes inside this place mentally, and he sees a very high domed ceiling, and in the center of this big room was like a raised platform, a dais, or maybe even an altar. And he got a very different impression that there's something very spiritual about this whole place, okay? And he described it in some detail. Now, this was a report that was done back in the late 80s, I guess, maybe around 87, something like that. In the mid-90s, I happened to run across a fellow who had no connection with the military program, but had been doing remote viewing for about 20 years, mm-hmm. and was more or less self-taught, but had been practicing for a long time, and he turned out to be a very good remote viewer, too. And one day in a conversation with him, we got off into some stuff, and he said, "Well, yeah, I think there is some controlling points within the galaxy. There's like six or seven of these places." And I said, "Oh, we're not kind of Galactic Headquarters." And he kind of laughed. He said, "Yeah, I guess you'd have to call it that." He said, "I called it the Federation Headquarters or whatever." And I said, "So you've gone to this place?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, you know, describe it. You know, what is it?" Art, he gives me the exact same description as Mel Riley had years before. He says it's on a plain, there's a lake, there's a pyramid-type building with a long ramp, two obelisks on either side. Inside's a huge dome room with this raised platform in the center. The exact same description. Now, you know, what's that all about? These fellows did not know each other. This was years apart. I don't see any way that they could have colluded on their story. So that means they're either both dreaming the same dream or coming up with the same thing, or this is a reality and they both went to the same place and both were describing the same place.
All right. Well, a lot of what you're saying sounds a lot like what Sheldon Neidel says. Are you familiar with him?
Perhaps not.
The Galactic Federation, I believe. All right. Hold on, Jim. We'll get right back to you. I'm Art Bell, and from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Jim Mars, who's written Alien Agenda and is now talking about it. Stay right where you are.
up with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art Bell.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Jim Mars is my guest. The one line we've got available at this hour is the Wild Card Line, area 702-727-1295. You've got nothing to lose but the fact. All right. Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda. Jim, there is an 800 number where they can order your book as well as walking into any bookstore in the country.
That's true.
What is the 800 number?
That's 1-800-905-8367. It's everything you wanted to know under one cover.
800-905-8367?
That's correct.
Okay.
905-8367.
Gotcha. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Hi. My name is Trish. I'm from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Hi, Trish.
It's really good to hear you back on the air.
Thank you.
I'm worried about you with that flu. I believe I've been contacted, and I'm just calling to find out, how do you know if contact has been made? Is it only by dreams or other methods, or...
Well, how do you feel like you've been contacted?
I have this constant feeling that I'm being called home, and it's getting really annoying.
But you haven't gotten any specific directions, right? It's just kind of an intuitive feeling.
It's mostly a feeling. There's times when I feel like I'm picking up things from songs or just little things in dreams, like... I don't know, I dreamt that I got a website that I've never even heard of before last night. And just, I don't know, just like I'm supposed to meet up with somebody, or a huge feeling of anticipation.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I think a whole lot of us might be feeling anticipation. I think there's interesting things going on. I don't really know about your individual case. I would just have to say that you have to kind of, but what we're finding out is that there's a lot more to life than just our normal day-to-day activities. So stay in touch with that, but don't go overboard. Do you hear what I'm saying?
I'm sure she does. She's offline now, but I'm sure she does.
Okay.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Jim. I can't wait to read your book. I've been stuck in this thing about the ETs, and I'm a contactee myself.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, I was contacted this past April, and I really believe that I'll probably be contacted again this coming April, too. But this past April, I actually saw the triangle-shaped craft with the rounded edges.
Uh-huh.
You know, at the top and the three sides. And the funny thing about it, it had a very small one with sharp edges, like connected to the side of it.
What connected to the side of it?
A small triangle with sharp edges.
Was that part of it, or like it was attached?
It was attached to the side of this one that was really gigantic. It had rounded edges on it.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, we've heard that before. Hasn't there been something about a triangle craft that lighter than air type triangle craft that carries other craft?
Yeah. There's something like that. Of course, the thing that went over Phoenix apparently was a kind of a boomerang shape, or in the form of a triangle. Let me ask the caller this. Have you ever tried, you say you're a contactee, have you ever tried, attempted to like carry on a normal conversation with these folks?
Again, the caller is gone. So sorry about that, Jim.
But speaking of the thing over Phoenix, Art, I'm sure you're well aware that, you know, the description of that thing really, matches very, very closely to what they described over Belgium about a year previously.
That's correct. And, in fact, something I've seen myself.
But so, you know what's interesting is over in Europe, they took the thing very seriously. They, of course, they got a news media that's, you know, they got more of a news media over there. And they really, there was a lot of concern, a lot of people saying, what was it? And they actually, I forget now if it was the French government or the Belgian government, but one of the governments came out and said, look, this is some secret testing that's going on, and, you know, we just have to keep it secret. And they all, everybody went, oh, well, okay. And that was kind of that. It bothers me that in this home of the free, land of the brave, that our government can't even work up to saying something like that. They try to tell us, you're not seeing anything. It's not there, you know?
Well, they manage us. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Yes, sir. I'm calling from Atoka, Oklahoma.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask Jim if he knows about an extinction cycle of events that we have coming. It's the same type of cycle that killed the dinosaurs at various points in the past. The status quo knows about it, and they've been covering it up. But now they finally realize that they have to do something about it, or nobody's going to survive on the planet.
I think this is going to prompt them to come forward then and start admitting things.
They are going to have to if they want to survive along with the rest of us. They thought they, i.e. the status quo, thought that they could twist everything around to make man appear as the all-knowing, all-seeing God, and in fact, the six-fingered aliens are our creators.
You're going to want to listen tomorrow night to a guest I'm going to have on tomorrow night, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Good morning, Art and Jim.
Hi.
I just had one question for Jim. Why has the frequency of these visits by the ETs to our planet increased so dramatically over the last couple of years?
That's a good one.
That is a good one. And that is kind of the basis of my book, Alien Agenda. What is the alien agenda? And I'll tell you briefly what I think it is. Number one, there's various races that are visiting the Earth, some perhaps even interdimensional, intertemporal. And although in the past the prime directive has been in effect, which is that, and this is something that's not necessarily a law the way we understand a law, it's more of an understanding. When you get advanced enough to travel through the stars, you realize that it's simply not right to interfere with the natural evolution of the species. So everybody agrees that they're not going to do anything that's going to really interfere with the natural progress of a race. But in our case, we've upset the apple cart. Starting in 1945, when we set off the first atomic bomb, we now have it within our technological means to absolutely destroy this planet. Well, now, not only are we creating a problem by destroying a whole species ourselves, but as celestial mechanics would tell you, that if the Earth is actually physically destroyed or seriously disrupted, this would cause problems all through not only our solar system, but probably through the galaxy. So now they're concerned about us, but they're still caught on this prime directive. They don't want to directly interfere with us. So what do? They do what we did with the Tacita Indians over in the Philippines back in the 70s when they were the Stone Age tribe that we discovered. You let yourself be seen slowly at first, and then you get a little closer, and then you can let yourself be seen a little more frequently until the more primitive society begins to understand that they're not alone, but then they understand that that you're not an enemy, and then finally you can kind of make contact, and they're, what they're trying to do is in a very non-threatening way and kind of a covert way is to kick us up along the evolutionary ladder so that maybe we won't blow ourselves up and maybe we can get to the point to where we can take our rightful place as a responsible member of the galactic community.
All right, caller?
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, and take care. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Thank you. This is Jen Monterey.
Yes.
And love you, Art. Jim, what you say is very altruistic and, you know, positive. How about the biological testing that allegedly goes on with the abductees? As early as 92, we had a, you know, problem like that with one of our kids, and we called John Mack's office when he was still at Cambridge, and they put us in touch with a network of three therapists on the West Coast who were very avant-garde in, you know, that specific kind of therapy. It didn't work, and she's now dying of a tumor, you know, in the site of the what she claims was a testing. She claims she was, you know, impregnated, and then the baby was taken, and now, you know, now this is happening.
Right.
I wonder how many people who have claimed to have lost babies, you know, have had follow-up cancer. I wonder, you know, if you say that, that they're trying to help us up the evolutionary ladder.
Now, that's the overall alien agenda. If you've been listening to the whole program, earlier I said that I think that it, there seems to be some evidence that that our military and intelligence chiefs who are after, who want to maintain power and who are after their own agendas, if a deal has been cut, it's been cut between them and a faction of an alien race, who, in other words, is their hawks dealing with our hawks, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
Okay, so...
we can be hawks.
So, and obviously the abduction experience is not a positive thing for everybody. And I think that we do have to be careful. We have to try to maintain a balance between totally ignoring the situation or totally going to the other extreme and saying, oh, our space brothers are here to save us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the case. I don't think Art thinks that's the case.
No, I don't.
And I don't think you, you think that's the case.
I don't either, and I think that a contemporary comment is that I believe deeply in my heart that the Clinton thing is merely a, you know, diversion because... you know, thousands of scientists wanted to present. I really do. I think we all agree about that.
All right. I want to bring something else up, just briefly touch on it. An awful lot of UFO researchers, people deeply involved, have been coming up with these very aggressive cancers lately, Jim.
Right.
Right. Any comment, or do you want to stay away from that?
Well, the, you know, the problem there is you get off into paranoidsville because, you know, how do you know? I mean, people do get cancer, so it's you talk about your ultimate plausible deniability there. And yet it does seem, to kind of go over the edge. And, of course, again, going back to my experience with the Kennedy assassination, you can argue over how many people, you know, died mysteriously and in strange circumstances, but the fact that many did is incontrovertible. So, you know, it can happen, but, gosh, I don't know.
Thinking of Congressman Schiff, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Sherry Adamack, Stephen Greer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So forth. Strange stuff.
It's a spooky deal. Let me add a thought to you here, Art. You know, we were talking about how that you mentioned the Brookings report, which of course, you know, predicted that if it was announced that there was contact or that there was another advanced intelligent species, that our society would just fall into anarchy and chaos.
That's
and
right.
What they fear. Here's an idle thought. What if it's the exact reverse? You know, when disaster strikes communities, when there's a tornado or a hurricane or a flood, the people, you know, the best side of human nature comes out, and they band together, and they start working with each other, and they start working towards common purposes and goals.
Correct.
What if that's what they really fear, and that's why they want to keep it secret? They're afraid that we might realize that there's other stuff going on. Maybe we forget our petty differences and start working together and figuring out what's really going on.
You know, Ronald Reagan said that a number of times. If there was a common enemy.
Didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Hello, Art, and hello, Jim.
Howdy.
I want to report that, like Art, I saw a triangular craft, but it was way back in October of 1980 in central Georgia. And I almost did not see this thing and out of the corner of my eye, and then I thought it was like a piece of trash. It had been raining and misty, and it was like less than 100 feet from the ground, absolutely silent. And then maybe a few hundred yards later, it just made a maneuver. It just tilted up, straight up, and like spin on a dime, and I saw it lit up at that point in a triangular shape. And
how big was this thing?
This thing was... I would say 150 feet across.
Mm-hmm. Very much like what I saw.
But I've heard Art describe his, and they seem to go and just go over and just keep going. But this thing tilted up, you know, and I've heard the description of lighter than air, but I've never seen it lighter than aircraft. You know, just
right.
It was more like anti-gravity.
And this was about 1980, huh?
Right.
Art, when did you see yours?
Mine was about 4 years ago, and I wouldn't say it was a lighter-than-air craft. I think it was a very solid craft, and I think that it was defying gravity. There's no question about that. It floated directly above me, and it was about 150 feet from one point of the triangle to another, and it just floated directly above us and kept on going out across the valley.
Well, my point would be is that if this was some sort of like a secret government, you know, piece of equipment that they were testing.
Right.
And they were testing it in 1980, and then by the time you saw it, which is, you know, 4 years from today, and today we're talking almost 20 years later, think of a car 20 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I can't see why they would keep something like that secret for 20 years if it was one of ours.
Nor can I. That's two of us. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hi.
Yes, good evening, Art. Mr. Morris, I applaud your work. What do you say we jumpstart the new paradigm and take an aggressive approach to the alien agenda and initiate a mass communication process and make a mass call? Because as I understand, the prime directive is that they will not interfere with our free will. So if we were to take a, international, I don't know, work it through the Internet or some sort of a major PR campaign and initiate some sort of mass communication process so
that... dialing intergalactic 911.
Will you organize it? Let me know when it's going to happen.
I've tried it. I've done it.
I suggest March 29th of this year. I was a little premature on my prediction before, Art, as I predicted some sightings over Phoenix. I've looked again, and I'm looking at March 29th as a very opportune moment.
Dear, about 2 weeks before the Phoenix sightings of March 13th, we tried that, a mass communication. I mean, if telepathy is the manner of communication...
It is.
...then it's entirely reasonable that we would try a mass communication.
The government won't be able to stop that. And once they land, it'll be a moot point. I mean, as much as I respect Mr. Bassett's approach... I don't really think information is going to be forthcoming from the government for a long time, and I think if we really want to see something happen, we are going to have to make the call.
Jim, I have the same feeling about Steve Bassett's approach. I very much respect what he's trying to do. I'm just a little lost about whether it's the right approach.
Well, I believe it or not, I'm with both you two. I question it too, but again, let me reiterate my position, and I think this position we should all take, which is let's have our cake and eat it too. Let's do both. Let's don't get split into two warring camps over let's trust the government, let's don't trust the government. Let's push the government, tell them, look, do what you're supposed to do, try to support those initiatives, and at the same time, let's do our thing and try to get on with it.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jim Morris. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to make a comment about how I feel that if aliens were actually shown to be absolutely true to the world, if they manifest themselves in a way that it was like, okay, they're here, how that would challenge, you know, people's views on religion, and how I feel
severely
also that, like in our country with Christianity, and as Mr. Morris said, you know, he believes, you know, that he's in the Bible, and I really feel that that would pretty much disprove and challenge a lot of people's religious beliefs.
What would it disprove?
Am I on the air?
You better
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought I was being screened.
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't screen calls.
I thought it happened one time before when I called, but that was weird. Okay. Yeah, well...
Challenge people's religious beliefs, you said.
Yeah.
In what way?
Well, I used to... I'm pretty skeptical when it comes to religion. I used to be very intense with Christianity. I studied the Bible a lot, and I'm pretty skeptical.
All right, so in what way would it challenge your beliefs?
Well, it wouldn't challenge my beliefs now. I mean, the way I look at it, if something can be shown to be true, then I just have to accept that. And, you know, it's part of the way it is. You know, it's truth, right?
Right.
But I think what you'll find is that is that when people's religious beliefs get seriously challenged, it's going to create a lot of tension because, you know, it comes from a strong psychological need. I mean, that's what religion serves. So, you know, that's like really important, too. It should be understood.
Right. When bad things happen to people, they say, well, it must be God's will. I can't just say it's God's will.
That's it. All right, Jim, we are out of time. I really want to thank you for being here again and sort of breaking us away from the mess in Washington.
We kind of got into the big intergalactic mess, right?
That's exactly right. Thank you so much, Jim.
Well, this has been great. We'll need to do this again sometime.
We shall. Good night, Jim.
Good night.
All right, that's Jim Mars, author of Alien Agenda. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. If you've been looking